listener-supported non-commercial radio. From the campus of Henry Ford College, you are listening to WHFR Dearborn. Good morning, y'all. Thanksgiving week 2024. And welcome to it, right? Another Radio Vault kicks off this 26th day of November 2024. Let me quickly go over our festive offerings for today. We feature the radio comedies and variety shows and occasionally light drama from a bygone era. Bygone meaning maybe our grandparents or our great-grandparents were entertained by all this programming. We kick it off in just a moment with George Burns and Gracie Allen. They had their radio show before they had their television show, and before George really got into... You might actually remember some of George Burns' movies. I guess Oh God was one of them. Many others. Well, in this episode from 1946, December 12th to be exact, Gracie, the ever-creative Gracie, decides to start a babysitting business to earn some Christmas money. We're also going to hear from the great Gildersleeve this morning. This is a show that I believe we played last year. The Thanksgiving Dinner Show from 1942. What else is on tap? Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet to eat. And Archie and Finnegan contemplate, is there a Santa Claus? We can't get by one of these shows without playing a Jack Benny show. We're not quite to the Christmas shopping shows yet, but this is the Thanksgiving program where Jack can't seem to get the historical background of Thanksgiving correct. All right. Our final hour for today's Radio Vault, The Life of Riley. Two consecutive shows, as a matter of fact, from 1944. The show about Riley's kid playing football and a big football bet between him and Gillis, their kid, playing on an opposing high school team. And then the Rileys go on a turkey hunt for our last feature of today. In a nutshell, that's all of today's Radio Vault extravaganza. I am, of course, the keeper of the archives. So if you're ready, I'm ready to go back to December 12, 1946. And the original Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. With yours truly, Bill Goodwin, the music of Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, and Jerry Hosner, Elvia Allman, Margaret Brayton, our happy postman, Mel Blanc. For your Thursday night comedy enjoyment, it's George and Gracie. Week before last, George challenged Gracie to earn her own Christmas money. He wishes now he'd challenged Joe Louis to a fight. First, Gracie sold his cigars. Then she painted his car yellow and started a yellow cab service. Then she sold Christmas trees, which she chopped out of Griffith Park. But wait, now you're going to hear something really gruesome. And here he is.
Gracie, please. Please stop trying to earn your own Christmas money. I'll give you all you want.
No, sir. You said I wasn't smart enough to earn it, and I'm going to show you. I'll earn it with my own hands, no matter how hard it is.
Look, honey, I take back what I said. You are smart. You're brilliant.
Am I pretty?
You're beautiful. You're the most brilliant, most beautiful woman in the world. Now, will you give up earning your own Christmas money?
Well, I was going to, but if I'm that smart and pretty, I can't miss.
And so Gracie has continued to try and earn her own Christmas money. Poor George never knows what scheme she'll try next. For example, today at noon when he came home...
Oh, Gracie, I'm home! For Pete's sake, a baby on the couch. Gracie, where are you?
Here I am, dear.
Look, a baby. Where did it come from?
Your mother never told you?
I mean, who does it belong to?
Oh, it belongs to Mrs. Bohannon. I'm watching it while she goes shopping.
What for?
For 50 cents.
Gracie, are you still trying to earn your own Christmas money?
Yes, and I didn't think you'd mind if I was a babysitter.
That's babysitter.
Oh, believe me, with a baby in the house, you do very little sitting.
This is murder. You know absolutely nothing about taking care of children.
Well, I admit that, dear. But there's a radio program that tells you all about babies. Oh, it's time for it right now. Turn the radio on, dear. They say this is absolutely the last word on child care.
Brought to you by the makers of Teeny Weeny Baby Powder. The powder that soothes your teeny weeny baby from top to, if you'll pardon the expression, bottom. If you're a mother, you have a teeny weeny. But every mother doesn't know what to do with her teeny weeny. Would you like to know what to do with your teeny weeny? Well, we'll tell you. And remember, this program is brought to you by the makers of Teeny Weeny Baby Powder. The powder that's 815 ways better. Yes, 815 ways better. Not one way better. Not two ways better. Not three ways better. Not four ways better. Not five.
That's enough, Teeny Weeny.
Oh, yes. We'll tune in after commercial.
You can pick the darnest way. Hey, there's another baby on the chair. And another one under the table. And another one by the radio. I'll stand here till they stop. There's nothing... What happened? Oh, somebody came in with a toy, I guess. Gracie, what do you do when they all cry at once?
Well, at first I didn't know what to do, and then I read a book that solved everything.
A book on child care?
No, Forever Amber.
That book says nothing about stopping babies from crying.
Well, I know, but I got so interested in what it did say that I didn't notice them.
Great.
You know something, though? The more I look at this little baby, the more I realize how incomplete a home is without me.
You're right.
In fact, it would be nice to...
George, are you trying to say that you'd like to have one around all the time?
Yeah.
All right. After Christmas, we'll go into the babysitting business permanently.
We will not.
But you just...
Never mind. How have you kept these babies entertained?
With your watch and the vacuum cleaner.
My watch and vacuum cleaner?
Yeah, they played with your watch.
Well, what about the vacuum?
Well, after they finished playing with your watch, I had to pick it up.
Look, tune in that program again. Maybe they'll have some less expensive ideas.
Oh, yes, the Teeny Weeny Baby Powder program. They must be giving advice on babies right now.
Not 247 ways better. Not 248 ways better. Not 249.
Nuts to that. Teeny wing, come in.
Hello, all.
Oh, how do all?
Hello, Meredith.
Say, isn't that a baby on that chair?
Yes, it is.
I knew that was a baby. I'm pretty smart about those things.
Sam Einstein.
Well, Meredith, that's not the only one. We have five babies.
By George.
No, they're not by George.
Newman.
I'm taking care of them while their mothers go shopping. That's how I'm earning my Christmas money.
Yeah, can you think of anything sillier?
Oh, I think it's interesting. Yes, even inspiring to have charge of these future citizens. Who knows? That little baby lying there smiling and cooing may someday be president of the United States.
Oh, the baby heard you.
What do you want to do, discourage the kid? Ah, there. He didn't mean it, baby. You'll probably grow up to be like me.
Oh, George. George, don't say that. If the baby grows up to be like you, she'll never get married.
She?
Oh,
I didn't know.
There you are. That's what makes taking care of babies so interesting. You never know what they're going to grow up to be. Would you like to hear what happened to my aunt in that respect?
No.
Well, sir, my aunt, Martha is her name, Martha Frisbee. She married Fred Frisbee, the silo builder. I guess you heard of Fred.
He builds all my silos, yes.
Well, one night... And by the way, lots of people get him confused with Fred Frisbee from Fort Dodge, Iowa.
Oh, this is a different Frisbee.
Yes, Fred Frisbee from Fort Dodge is a hog breeder.
Oh.
And in 1937, at the Kansas City Livestock Show, he exhibited the biggest boar Iowa has ever produced.
I'm glad you won, Meredith.
George. Go on, Meredith. Tell us what happened with your aunt.
Oh, yes. Back to Aunt Martha.
She's married to Fred.
Fred Frisbee. One night in 1914, Aunt Martha was caring for a neighbor's baby, and it was teething. Well, sir, nothing my aunt could do seemed to help. Suddenly, she spied a bottle of bourbon in the cupboard. So she rubbed bourbon on the baby's gums, and that did it. My aunt gave him his start.
Gave him his start?
Yep. She rubbed bourbon on his gums, and today... his picture is in every magazine. He's a man of distinction.
Out, Meredith.
Hmm?
Out.
Out?
Out.
Goodbye, all.
Goodbye, all. Now, Gracie, I still say you don't know how to take care of these babies, and you better call their mother.
Oh, that's right. The Teeny Weeny program. I can tune in that now. Gee, radio is wonderful today. You can learn anything you want to know. Just...
Not 518 ways better. Not 519 ways better. Not 520.
Let's get tickets to that program sometime. It must be wonderful to watch.
Yes.
That sounds like a new tune, Meredith.
Well, it is, Bill. Brand new. By the same boys who wrote the trolley song. Bill, just take a look at this lyric.
I shall. Thank you. I know a spot peaceful and fair. I'd be so happy if I were there. No matter where I chance to be, Connecticut is the place for me. Miss every lake, miss every hill. Even in dreams, I think of them still. And when you see them, you'll agree, Connecticut is the place to be. Say, Meredith, that's a really fine tribute to the Nutmeg State, and one that's surely rated. That rugged rolling country, so rich in history and legend, makes Connecticut a mighty picturesque and colorful part of the American scene.
George, it's time to feed the babies. Would you like to watch?
I'd rather eat myself. Haven't had any lunch yet.
Well, your lunch is all ready, dear. I fixed your food and the baby's food at the same time.
Good.
Would you like your formula in a bottle or a glass?
I don't want any baby formula.
Well, it's all right. I'll burp you afterwards.
I doubt if you even know how to burp a baby.
I do, too. When you strain the baby's vegetables, you put in a few radishes.
Believe me, you need help.
All right, I'll turn on the teeny-weeny program and get some instructions.
Yes.
Surely the commercial is over by now.
Not 813 ways better. Not 814 ways better. But 815 ways better. That is our claim for teeny-weeny baby powder.
Well, at last he finished.
And now you ask, what are those 815 ways?
Who asked?
All right, I'll tell you. First, it's so fragrant you can smell it. Second, it's so pure you can eat it. Third, it's so mild you can...
My goodness, now he's going to tell us 815 things to do with the powder.
I can make it 816. I'd like to bounce a can off his head.
Well, never mind. I'm sure I can feed them all right. Now, let's see. Which one gets his bottle first?
You know, all these babies look alike. How do you keep them getting them mixed up?
Oh, I figured out a way to tell which is which. It's sort of a filing system. Now, for instance, this baby is named Charles, so I put him in a chair. C for chair, C for Charles.
C for chair, C for Charles.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great system.
And then I put Mrs. Tracy's baby under that little table because her name is Margaret.
That I don't get at all. Margaret begins with an M.
Oh, George, what kind of a table is that?
A coffee table.
M for Margaret. M for Maxwell House.
Well, the sponsor ought to like that system.
Oh, it's really wonderful. I lean Mrs. Peterson's baby up against the radio because her name is Sally.
You better explain that one, too.
But, dear, it's so obvious. Who invented the radio?
Marconi.
What nationality was he?
Italian.
What's the favorite food in Italy?
Spaghetti.
S for spaghetti.
S for salad. I was a fool not to say that.
A huge dope.
Dear, hand me that bottle of formula. I'll stop with little Bill.
Yeah.
Well, I'll answer it, dear. Maybe it's another customer.
Good morning, Mrs. Burns. Here's your mail.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Postman.
Isn't that a nursing bottle you have in your hand with a nipple on it?
Mm-hmm. I was just about to give the little fellow his lunch.
Did Mr. Burns misplace his teeth?
Oh, no, I wasn't feeding Mr. Burns. I was feeding a little baby. We have five of them, and we're keeping while their mothers go shopping.
Oh, I love babies. May I see them?
Well, of course. Step right in.
Hello, Mr. Postman.
Hello, Mr. Burns.
There they are, Mr. Postman.
Just look at their happy little faces. Oh, the horror of it all.
Why, Mr. Postman, you're crying. What's the matter?
Oh, I was just thinking, those happy little babies, they'll grow up and get married.
Mr. Postman, maybe your home life would be happier if you had a baby or two.
Yeah, take a couple of these with you. Personally, I'd like to get rid of all of them.
Oh, George.
Oh, I already have a family. 2 children and a bulldog. The children look just like me.
Ah, your wife got left out, huh?
No, the bulldog looks like her.
You'd better not let that statement get back home.
You're right. That dog will tear my leg off. Well, goodbye, Mr. and Mrs. Burns. You remember. Keep smiling.
Feed the babies.
Gracie, I still say you don't know enough about it.
Oh, that reminds me. The teeny-weeny program. Surely they've gotten to the advice on babies by now.
524th, it contains no opium. 525th, it can be used for polishing a horse's hooves. 526th,
must get a can of that powder. I can give it to some horse for Christmas.
Come in.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Burns. I'm Mrs. Ranspot from down the street. I understand you're taking care of babies now.
Yes, that's right, Mrs. Ranspot.
Well, I brought little Cedric over for you to watch. Say hello to Mrs. Burns, Cedric. I'm afraid he's sort of shy around strange women.
Well, he certainly doesn't take after your husband. I was at a party with him.
Oh, boy. Oh. I'm sorry, Mrs. Ranspot, but we're not taking any more babies.
Oh, how dreadful. I did so want to see that new Charles Boyer picture.
Oh, George, please let her go. I'll take good care of Cedric. And I know just how Ms. Ranspot feels about Charles Boyer.
Yes, he sends me.
Oh, yes. Me too, especially when he takes the heroine in his arms.
Yes.
And he bends closer and closer to her lips.
Yes.
And those big soft eyes of his seem to fill the whole screen.
Yes.
And that wonderful vein in his temple starts to throb.
Yes.
Oh, wait, I'll get my hat and go with you.
Gracie, come back here.
Look, dear, you can watch the babies just as well as I can. I'll turn on the teeny-weeny powder program so you can get advice, huh? Goodbye, dear.
Well, this is great. Stuck with a half a dozen kids.
814th, it will not explode if dropped on the floor. And 815th, it can be sprinkled inside a motorman's glove. And now for our advice about babies.
Good.
Don't have any. They might grow up to be radio announcers and have to read stuff like this.
Here's one of Gracie's favorites, Rose Room. Meredith Wilson and his chiffon music. Gracie around?
Shh. What's the matter?
Gracie's out and I've got a couple of babies in here.
Well, introduce me, introduce me.
Bill, you don't understand. These are young babies.
I like them young. Tell them Goodwin's here.
These babies drink out of bottles.
That's for me. Tell them Goodwin's here.
They're about 6 months old.
Tell them Goodwin just left. So long.
No. Just a minute. You woke that baby up and you're going to help me put it back to sleep.
Well, George, what are you doing with babies around the house anyway?
The mothers left them here while they went out shopping.
I know how to quiet the little fella.
Hush-a-bye, baby, be quiet as a mouse. Mommy's out shopping for Maxwell House. I knew that'd make you happy, kid. Yes, sir. Now you can collect your pay.
Yeah, they'll probably give me 35 cents.
Oh, goody. You can invest in some AT&T.
Huh?
Apples, taffy, and Tootsie Roll.
Are you sure this is the Burns house, Elmer?
Yes, pet.
We've been trying to adopt a baby. Elmer, we've been trying to adopt a baby for 2 years. And now at last we're going to get one. Well, don't stand there. Ring the doorbell, Elmer.
Yes, pet.
The postman says they've got a whole house full of babies. And Mr. Burns would like to get rid of them.
Yes, Pep.
Now, when he comes to the door, you keep your mouth shut for a change and let me do the talking.
Yes, Pep.
Quiet. I hope you've come for one of these babies.
Yes, Pep.
Huh?
Stop gabbing, Elmer.
Yes, Pet.
Well, here are the babies. Pick yours out.
Let's see. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. This one.
I didn't know he had a moe in the crowd.
Now, how much do we owe you?
Oh, I don't know. Whatever it's worth to you.
How about $100?
What?
$150? All right, here's $200.
But
quick,
yes,
Elmer,
Pet.
Before he changes his mind. Now, here's our name and address. You can send the baby's things there. Goodbye.
Wow. $200. Sing some more, you money-making little rascal.
$200.
Here it is, cold cash.
For watching one baby?
That's right.
George, if we can line up Bing Crosby's business, we can retire.
You're not kidding. This beats radio. I got $200 for just sitting an hour.
Yeah, at that rate, you've earned millions you've never collected.
Yeah. Well, this sitting is quite a business.
And you can pick up some extra money from farmers, too.
Farmers?
Well, sure, as long as you're sitting here, you can hatch a few eggs.
Great idea.
Excuse me a moment, dear. I'm going to phone the papers and put in an ad.
Boy, this is the sweetest little racket a guy ever saw. Come in.
Good evening. I'm Mrs. Preble. I've come to get my baby, little Bill.
Okay, pick him out.
Very well. Well, this is strange, Mr. Burns. He's not here.
He must be. This is all we've got left.
Then you've lost him. You've lost my little Bill. I'll put you in jail for the rest of your life.
But look...
No. That's not enough punishment for a man your age.
Now, wait a minute.
Well, dear, hello.
Mrs. Preble claims we've mislaid her bill.
We'll make her out a new one. We'll charge her the usual $200.
We've mislaid her baby.
In that case, make it $100.
I'll sue you unless I get my baby.
Well, how about this one?
It's not mine. Mine has blonde hair.
Well, how about taking this one in a bottle of peroxide?
Certainly not.
Well, how about this one?
Well, that's not mine either. Mine was wearing a white cotton dress.
Oh, well, then you're getting a bargain. This dress has lace on it.
Hey, wait a minute. A blonde baby in a white cotton dress. A couple came by and got him. Here's their name and address.
Give me that, you imbecile. I'll go and get my baby.
Well, the nerve of her. She left without paying us the $200. Now, calm down, dear. Let's go to bed and forget the whole thing.
Poor people thought they were adopting a baby. I had to give him back the $200.
All right. Now, go to bed, dear.
Okay, but remember, no more babysitting. If I ever see another baby around here... Holy smoke! There's one in my bed.
Oh, I forgot about him. His mother left him for the night.
I said no more babysitting.
Well, this one is lying down.
Join us again next week when we'll all be back. George Burns, Gracie Allen, Meredith Wilson as orchestra, yours truly, Bill Goodwin. The George Burns and Gracie Allen Show is written by Paul Henning and Keith Fowler. Until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House.
Good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Hi, I'm the jumper, the one who wrote that Trailways bus out of Louisiana. Now I'm on that blues plane doing my thing. All the way up 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at night on WHFI 89.3 each and every Wednesday night. So, hey, you want to stop in and have some fun? We got blues you can use right here on WHFI 89.3 Dearborn.
I've been downhearted, baby.
All right, you are listening to Radio Vault, Thanksgiving Week Edition, from December 12, 1946. That was George Burns and Gracie Allen. And we're just kind of getting started here on our program. Don't forget, we have a whole hour of The Life of Riley. Turkey hunt episode, and one we've never featured, about a big baseball vet. That's for hour number three in today's show. So let us once again go back and go to our next feature from November 22nd, 1942. Of course, The Great Gildersleeve was a spinoff from Fibber, McGee, and Molly. You knew that, right? If you've been paying attention to this program. So it's November 22nd, 1942. How many years was that ago was that? You figure it out. And let's listen to The Great Gildersleeve.
The Great Gildersleeve. Cheese Company, who also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, present each week at this time Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheaton. We'll hear from The Great Gildersleeve in just a moment. Let's get on to The Great Gildersleeve, who has been putting in a busy Saturday morning down at the water department trying to clear his desk of all the odds and ends that have piled up there. As we join him now, we find him almost down to the blotter and feeling pretty good about it.
Action, yes, action. That's the keynote today, Miss Fitch.
And you have accomplished a great deal this morning, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yes, sir. Never put off till tomorrow what you can do today.
I try not to.
Procrastination is the thief of time.
There's a letter here.
Time and tide wait for no man.
This woman wrote in 2 weeks ago.
For want of a nail, the shoe was lost, Miss Fitch. Action, that's the thing, action.
Mr. Gildersleeve, are you going to answer this woman's letter?
What does she want?
Action.
Sure. Well, let's see the letter.
She says she wrote in 2 weeks ago and never got an answer.
Oh, yes, I remember this. Take an answer. Dear madam, in reply to your recent letter regarding Anil in your bathtub, we wish to thank you for calling this to our attention. After a thorough investigation of the matter, we wish to report that it would have been impossible for the said eel to have gained access to your tub through the faucet. As all our water is carefully filtered, and furthermore, standard plumbing fixtures are too small to accommodate Anil of the dimensions you describe. We can only suggest that the creature either crawled up the drain, in which event your attorney should get in touch with the Department of Public Works, not us. Or possibly it was placed in your tub by an enemy. While it's out of our department, we'd suggest that a stopper kept in the tub at all times should prove an effective precaution against eels in the future. Failing which, we'd advise a closer check on your friends. Very truly yours, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, Water Commissioner. You got that?
Yes, Mr. Gildersleeve.
That ought to hold her. What's next?
Well, I don't know whether you want to do anything about this.
Let's have it. Action, Miss Fitch. Let's clear the decks here.
Very well.
This is no time for bottlenecks.
No.
You'll notice that in every photograph of Donald Nelson, there's not a single paper on Donald Nelson's desk. That's the only way to be an executive. Do it now. Strike while the iron is hot. Come, come, come. What have you got there?
A 6-month reminder from your dentist.
You. Well, suppose you put that in the deferred file.
That's where it came from.
You're a hard woman, Miss Fitch. All right, call up the dentist and make an appointment for Monday.
Good.
For Leroy. Come on, let's get on here. Time's a-wasting. Have you got the application for my bee gas ration?
Yes, it's right here.
Oh, I must remember to get that in this afternoon.
It's all filled out. All you have to do is sign it.
I better check it over. Let's see here. It says, occupational use of the vehicle. If vehicle is used for driving between home and fixed place of work in the principal occupation as stated in items 4 and 6 above, answer all questions in part A below. If vehicle is used in the performance of the principal occupation stated in items 4 and 6 above, oh, brother, I'll take your word for it, Miss Fitch.
You also have to get the signatures of any person sharing the ride with you.
Oh, well, Judge Hooker is my share of the rider, but he isn't speaking to me. He can darn well sign, though.
I understand very few people are going to get the B rations.
Oh, I'll get one, all right. After all, I'm a city official. I have to do a lot of official driving. I'm entitled to one if anybody is.
Yes, but have you heard who's head of the ration board now?
It doesn't make any difference. Who?
Judge Hooker.
Judge Hooker. Oh, my goodness. If Hooker will find some technicality. He'll block it if he has to stage a filibuster. Maybe I better invite the old goat to Thanksgiving dinner after all.
That might soften him up a little.
Yes, certainly. He couldn't accept a man's hospitality and then trick him out of his B card, could he?
I don't recall that the application form covers that.
No, I didn't think so. Quiet. Here comes the old sourball now. Well, hello there, Judge.
Gildersleeve.
The bus leaves whenever you're ready, Judgy.
I'm ready now.
Be right with you. Can't keep a customer waiting, can we, Miss Fitch? I'll get my hat and coat.
Mr. Gildersleeve, you're not forgetting.
Oh, yes. Thank you. While you're waiting, Judge, Miss Fitch has an application blank there that requires your signature. A mere formality, you know.
What's this?
Just to show that I'm sharing my car with you.
Oh, so you're applying for a B ration book, huh?
Aren't we all? Give the judge a pen, Miss Fitch. Here. Oh, use mine. It's a self-filler. I think you'll like it. There, that's it.
There you are.
Thank you, Judge. Well, see you Monday, Miss Fitch. Oh, by the way, Horace, I meant to ask you before. I hope you'll give us the pleasure of dining with us as usual on Thursday.
I thought you'd forgotten all about Thanksgiving.
Not at all. Thanksgiving wouldn't be Thanksgiving without you, Horace. You know that.
This.
I feel like a sissy in this fool outfit.
This is the kind of clothes the Pilgrims wore. And they were no sissies.
Yeah, but they didn't have to wear them in front of a whole auditorium full of people.
Stand still, will you, before I jab you with this pin.
Courtship of Miles Standish.
Why don't you speak for yourself, John?
Yeah.
Oh! I told you you'd get stuck. No. I think you're going to look real cute when I get this down.
That's just what I'm afraid of. That's what the whole school is going to think.
Leroy, will you stand still?
It wouldn't have been so bad if I was Miles Standish. I'd get to wear a helmet. But John Alden, that panty waist. I'm lucky the teacher didn't make me play Priscilla.
I don't see why you feel that way. John Alden is a hero. Remember, it's John Alden who gets the girl.
Yeah, Ethel Hammerschlager can have her.
And Leroy.
Hello.
Well, look at our little pilgrim.
Hey, Marge, can't I take this off now?
No, wait till I get it pinned.
You know your lines yet, young man?
Some of them.
Well, it's about time. You've been rehearsing that part for a month.
I've been trying to get out of it for a month.
That's no attitude to take. The Courtship of Miles Standish is great literature. I studied it in school myself. I remember it to this very day. This is the forest primeval, the murmuring pines and the hemlocks.
That's Evangeline, Uncle Mort.
Well, that's good, too. Let's hear you recite that speech you were having trouble with last night, Leroy.
No, I don't want to.
Come on now, I want to see if you've learned it.
Well, some other time, Unc.
No, right now. I'd like to hear it. We both would. Wouldn't we, Marjorie?
We'd love to.
No, I won't do it. Not if she's going to listen.
Young man, you'll recite that speech or you'll go right upstairs to your room.
Okay.
We're waiting.
Let's see. Prithee, Mistress Priscilla, turn out of that field of the suit of one who go absent yet,
yet loves thee with a noble and undying passion. Go back and try it again.
Do I have to?
Yes. If you don't keep at it, you'll never learn the part.
If I don't learn the part, maybe we won't have to do it.
You'll do it, or I'll know the reason why. Come on now, once more.
Prithee, Mistress Priscilla. Prithee, Mistress. I can't say it.
You're not trying. Prithee, Mistress Priscilla. Now you got me doing it. Oh, Bertie, I want to talk to you. Leroy, you go up to your room and practice.
Darn old Miles Standish anyway.
Quiet, you. Bertie, I've invited Judge Hooker to Thanksgiving dinner. So that'll mean one more.
That'll mean five more.
If what?
Yes, I hope you don't mind, Uncle Mort. I invited four of the boys from Camp Fuller.
Oh, well, fine. The more, the merrier. Thanksgiving isn't Thanksgiving unless there are plenty around to enjoy the turkey.
Speaking of turkey, Mr. Gilflee.
Yes, Bertie?
You wouldn't want to buy a chance on one, would you, I don't suppose?
What do you mean, Bertie?
Well, the ladies at my church is holding a turkey raffle.
Again? All right, I'll buy a chance. How much are they?
25 cents. That's for one.
One chance. There you are. There's a quarter.
Thank you. Most everybody around here has bought one from me. All the neighbors.
Well, you're doing fine.
Of course. You used to buy two chances, and stands to reason you'd have twice as good a chance as they have.
Yeah. No getting around that, Bertie. All right, I'll take two.
Mr. Gilsleeve, you're making no mistake. Turkey's awful expensive this year.
Yes, I know, Bertie.
48 cents a pound at A1 grocery.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. So if even you used to buy three chances, you'd still be ahead.
Sold, Bertie. Make it three.
Yes, sir. Let's see now. How many is it going to be for dinner?
Well, there's Marjorie and Leroy and Judge Hooker and Mrs. Ransom and the four soldiers and you, Bertie. That makes nine.
And you, that makes 12.
Yes. Yes, me.
That's going to take a big turkey.
Well, maybe we should order one right away and ask him to hold it for us.
Well, let's wait and see how this raffle comes out first, Marjorie. We don't want to be stuck with two turkeys, you know.
Of course, they've sold quite a lot of chances on it. You've only got three.
Bertie, if you can guarantee I'll get the turkey, I'll take five chances.
Well, I can't promise nothing, but my cousin's doing the drawing.
I'll take five.
Well, that'll be a dollar and a quarter.
That's right. Well, here's another dollar.
That's quite a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
A dollar and a quarter will buy a lot of things.
Don't I know it.
You wouldn't like to take a couple more chances just to protect your investment.
You get out of here, Bertie, before you ruin me. I got to get down to the ration board. Look at that crowd.
Yes.
Pardon me. Could somebody tell me whether this is where you get B ration books?
No, this is where you don't get them.
Yeah, wise guy. Madam, would you mind?
You can't shove in here.
I'm not trying to shove in.
End of the line.
End of the line. I've been waiting here since 2 o'clock and you come trying to shove in.
Yeah.
Madam, I was merely trying to ask a civil question.
End of the line, yes. Bud.
Just a minute. Who do you think you're pushing?
Well, who do you think you're pushing?
Well, who do you think you're pushing? By George, if you weren't wearing glasses.
Well, I'll take them off. There.
You look worse. Put them back on.
What's the fuss?
He tried to shove in ahead of me.
I did not.
He did too, and he squeezed my hand.
Oh! Now look here, my good woman.
We'll have to ask for order here, my friend. Why don't you just take your place in the line?
I'm trying to find out whether this is the right line. I've come for my B ration book.
Oh, you've come for it, eh?
Yes. I have my application right here.
You and 100 million others.
What? Young man, evidently you don't know who I am. I happen to be Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, and I have to do a lot of driving.
Where to?
Well, out to the reservoir.
To the reservoir? What for?
See if there's anything in it.
Yeah? Listen, brother, if we gave a ration book to everybody who wants to drive out to the reservoir for a little necking in the moonlight...
I don't do any necking in the moonlight.
Oh, you like it in the dark?
Yeah. No! And I didn't come here to be insulted by underlings.
End of the line, bud.
Yes, end of the line!
Shut up!
Gildy.
Oh, Judge, I want you to tell this young whippersnapper here where he gets off.
Well, now, Gildy.
He has the nerve to tell me I'm not entitled to a B ration book.
Well, he may be right, Gildy. You're only sharing the ride with one person.
You can't throw those technicalities at me, Hooker. You're the share of my rider. You signed this application yourself.
I know that, Gildy. As a share of the rider, I'd be delighted to see you get your ration book. But as a ration official, I couldn't possibly pass this application. My conscience wouldn't allow it.
All right, Judge. As a ration official, you needn't bother to come to Thanksgiving dinner. And as a share of the rider, from now on, you can walk.
I'm the line.
Oh, you can have your own line.
The great Gildersleeve will be with us again in just a few seconds. Now back to Summerfield to the great Gildersleeve. Apparently, he'll get no more gas than the rest of us, but what about turkey? It's Tuesday afternoon now, only 2 days before Thanksgiving. We find our hero checking last-minute details with Marjorie.
What about those four soldiers, my dear? Are you sure they're coming?
Oh, yes. I had a note this morning from their commanding officer. They'll arrive at 12 o'clock sharp in a jeep.
A jeep?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, brother, what an appetite they'll have. I'll have to run around the house a couple of times to get myself up to concert pitch. Can't let the boys show me up at my own table.
I don't think you need to worry about that, Uncle Mort.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess we're all set. Soldiers accepted. Hooker canceled. Mrs. Ransom. Mrs. Ransom's coming, isn't she?
Well, you invited her, didn't you?
No, I thought you'd take care of that. You're the lady of the house.
Oh, but I thought you'd want to. Oh, dear. And I went over there this morning to borrow a roasting pan for the turkey and never said a word about it. What must she think?
Oh, this is terrible. This is awful. I'll run over there right now. Sir was right. She's made other plans. A fine thing. Borrow a woman's roaster and not invite her to dinner. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Leela, I've come to explain.
I don't know what there is to explain, I'm sure.
May I come in?
Well, I'm rather busy.
Just for a moment.
Well?
Leela, of course you're coming to Thanksgiving dinner Thursday.
Well, I'm hardly in the habit of going to places to which I've not been invited, Mr. Gildersleeve.
But you are invited. You've been invited all along. There was a mix-up, that's all. I thought Marjorie had asked you, and Marjorie thought I had.
How do I know? How do I know you're not just inviting me for my roasting pan?
Leela, when I thought of inviting you, nothing was further from my mind than a roasting pan.
Oh, you say those things, but you don't mean them.
It's the truth. You were the first one on my list, Leela.
Was I, Throckmorton? Sure enough.
Yeah, sure enough.
Oh, but I'm afraid I couldn't accept at this late date. You see, I've had all these other invitations.
Oh.
If I turn them down now, I know they'd be heartbroken, much as I'd like to have dinner with you.
We're having a 20-pound turkey.
Well, I love turkey, but I'm afraid I can't.
I'll save you the white meat.
No, don't tempt me now.
I'll save you the wishbone. We can make a wish on it.
What would you wish, Throckmorton?
I'm not supposed to tell you.
Well, I don't know that I could trust you with a wishbone. And anyway, I've promised these other people.
But you've got to come, Leela. Marjorie and Leroy will be terribly disappointed if you don't. And so will I. So will Bertie. And so will the Army.
The Army?
Yes, we're having four young lieutenants to dinner, too.
Throckmorton, why in the world didn't you say so?
You mean you'll come?
Will I?
You're too good to me, Leela. She's coming with bells on.
I wouldn't put it past her. Uncle Mort, can I borrow your shotgun?
No, Leroy, certainly not. Why?
I'm supposed to bring a gun to school tomorrow.
What kind of a school are they running? A reform school?
No, Miles Standish has got to have a blunderbuss.
A blunderbuss.
Here's your building suit, Leroy. I pressed the collar, so don't mess it up.
Oh, put it on, Leroy, and show Uncle Mort how nice it looks, not finished.
Oh, no. Go ahead. You look real nice in it.
I look like a sissy in it.
You look better than you do in that Mickey Mouse sweatshirt you wear all the time.
Yeah, and cleaner, too. Put on the pilgrim suit, Leroy.
Oh,
Your sister worked hard on it. It won't do you any harm to put it on once. Go ahead.
Okay. I'd like to meet that guy Longfellow.
Yeah. Well, Bertie, You think we're going to have enough turkey for all these people Thursday?
I don't know, Mr. Gillsleeve.
Let's see now. We've got four soldiers, and the four of us here, and Mrs. Ransom.
What about Judge Hooker?
Judge Hooker is an ungrateful old goat. Never mention his name in this house.
Excuse me. I didn't know it was like that again.
There'll be eight of us at dinner, and you know the way soldiers eat. You think we ought to figure on two turkeys?
I don't know, Mr. Gillsleeve. I don't know what we ought to do.
What's the matter, Bertie? You seem to be sort of dragging today.
I don't know. I don't guess I feel so good.
Out a little late last night?
No, sir, no later than usual. I just got a feeling, that's all.
What kind of a feeling?
Like things wasn't going to work out somehow.
Oh, well, don't let it get you down. By the way, when are they going to raffle off that turkey I bought all those chances on?
Yes, we can't wait much longer to find out about that. Thanksgiving's only 2 days off.
I was thinking, Mr. Gillsleeve, how would it be if we had a nice ham instead of a turkey?
Bertie, are you hiding something from us?
No, sir, I ain't hiding nothing. Except they had that raffle last night.
Oh.
You came close, Mr. Gillsleeve. You came mighty close. The winning number was 61 and you had 62.
But it still leaves us without a turkey.
Well, sort of.
Oh, well, if you gamble, you have to expect those things.
We better order a turkey right away, though.
Yes, we can't invite all those soldiers to come 20 miles for Thanksgiving dinner and have no Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, I'll go call up the market and reserve one.
That's just the trouble.
What do you mean?
I called up the market and all the turkeys is reserved.
You mean they won't sell us one?
Butcher says there ain't a turkey left in Summerfield. I don't know what's the matter. Last week, no pot roast. This week, no turkey.
We've got to have a turkey. We've invited all these soldiers. We've invited Mrs. Ransom. We've got to find one.
But where?
Don't ask me.
All right, Unc. How do you like it?
Like what?
The pilgrim suit.
Oh, forget the pilgrim suit. We just lost our turkey.
No turkey?
No turkey.
How do you like that? Well, it looks like we'll all wind up eating turkey sandwiches at the drugstore. Yeah. Some Thanksgiving.
The drugstore? Maybe Peavy's got a turkey. Hold everything, kids. I'll be right back. I'm going to the drugstore.
Hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Peavy. Peavy, you've got to help me out.
Well, I'm always glad to do a customer service.
Good. Have you got a turkey?
What was that again?
Have you got a turkey?
A turkey? Well, now, I've had people come in here and ask for some strange things, but this is the first time I've ever had a request for a turkey.
But never mind that. Have you got one?
No, Mr. Gildersleeve. Turkeys are one thing that I don't carry. I'm sorry. Have you tried the meat market?
Of course I've tried the meat market. Why do you think I came in here?
I wondered.
Now, just a minute, Peavy. You serve turkey sandwiches at your soda fountain, don't you?
Yes, we do serve a turkey sandwich.
You can't make a turkey sandwich without a turkey, can you?
Well, now, I wouldn't say that.
In other words, Peavy, your turkey sandwich is not a turkey sandwich.
Well, turkey sandwich has become a sort of a trade expression, although we serve it with genuine cranberry jelly on the side.
But suppose you don't care for cranberry jelly.
Well, then you just ask for the regular chicken sandwich.
Yes, sir. Peavy, I'm surprised at you. I don't know how you can sleep nights.
Well, I did used to have a little trouble, but I just take a cup of hot cocoa before going to bed now, and I find that sets me right. So does Mrs. Peavy.
Well, this isn't finding a turkey. I gotta get going. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Gildersleeve. Have a nice Thanksgiving.
And same to you. Don't drink too much cocoa. And don't let Mrs. Peavy...
Any luck, Uncle Mort?
Not a bit, my dear. I've been everywhere. It's no use. The Army's picked the place clean. There's not a single turkey left.
Maybe I should warn those boys at camp. They'll do better if they stay there.
Yes. Wait. There's just one chance left.
What's that?
If we can find out who won the turkey in Bertie's raffle, we might be able to buy it from him. Bertie!
Yes, Mr. Gillsleeve?
Would you mind coming in here?
Yes, sir.
Bertie, do you know who won that turkey in your raffle?
No, sir.
Do you think you could find out?
Well, sir, I might be able to. Then again, I might not.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if I was to find out who won, you might not like it.
Come clean, Bertie. What bush are you beating about now? Do you know who won the turkey?
Yes.
Well, why didn't you say so? Who is it?
Well, you said never to mention Judge Hooker's name.
Oh!
I told you you wasn't going to like it.
Well, there goes our only chance.
Uncle Moore, don't you think Judge Hooker would be willing to let you have it?
After what I told him down at the ration board? No, my dear, I really gave him a piece of my mind there.
What if you took it all back and invited him to dinner again?
When he's got the turkey, he'd just laugh at me. Wait a minute. Bertie?
Yes?
Does Judge Hooker know yet that he's won the turkey?
No, sir. I'm supposed to deliver it to him this evening.
Excuse me, folks. I gotta see a judge about a bird. Horace, I've come to ask your forgiveness.
Yeah, you come to the wrong place, Gildersleeve.
That's a cruel attitude, Judge, but I don't blame you for taking it.
You behave like a boor, Gildersleeve.
You're right, a big boor. In front of a whole lot of people, too.
Yeah.
I could kick myself when I think of it.
Yeah, we all fly off the handle sometimes.
There was no excuse for it, doing a thing like that to my old friend.
Well, guilty of...
Horace, you may think me a sentimental old fool, but we've been pals for a good many years now, haven't we? Off and on.
Yes, Gildy, we have. Off and on.
And we've always had Thanksgiving dinner together, haven't we?
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Well, I want you to have it with us again this year.
You really mean that?
Horace, I've said it before, and I mean it now more than ever. If you don't come to Thanksgiving dinner, it just won't be Thanksgiving dinner.
Certainly be delighted to come.
Good. Don't forget now.
I won't.
We'll be counting on you.
I'll be there. What time would you like to have me come?
Oh, come early, Judge. Come about 9 o'clock in the morning.
9 o'clock?
Yeah. And when you come, would you mind bringing that turkey you won in the raffle, Judge?
Got to be going. But it's been a mighty pleasant day.
Oh, stick around, Judge. The evening's young yet.
No, I've got to get an early start in the morning. But I don't know when I've had a fine Thanksgiving.
Well, it was your turkey, Judge.
Well, I share my turkey, you share your car. That's the spirit today.
Yeah, and good spirit, too. It brings people together, Judge.
Yes, it does, Gildy. I'm sorry we had that misunderstanding down at the ration board. As a matter of fact, you're probably entitled to a B ration. You use your car for official business.
Well, I don't want a B-book.
What?
No, I've been thinking about it, Horace. It seems to me the spirit of rationing is to get along with as little as you can, instead of grabbing all you can get.
You're absolutely right, Gildy. And I'm glad to hear you say it. You're a credit to the community.
Well, thank you, Horace. And you may rest assured that even though I've only a humble A-ration, my car will still be at your service at all times.
You mean that, Gildy?
I do indeed.
That's fine. I've got to meet a train at Moore's Junction at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Good night, Gildy.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
The Great Gildersleeve from 1942, when they were rationing gasoline and stuff. Wartime. Well, this is Radio Vault. That wraps up our first hour. We've got Mr. Jack Benny. He's waiting in the wings. This is the one where he gets confused, let's put it that way. And we are, of course, listener-supported non-commercial radio coming your way from the campus of Henry Ford College. We are WHFR Dearborn on your FM dial and on your stream. This is Radio Vault each and every Tuesday from 10 in the morning till 1 o'clock. We entertain you from audio from a bygone era. A virtual cornucopia of comedy, adventure, drama. And if you like the really deep, dark mysteries, you check us out on Sunday night for WHFR's very own Sunday Night Mystery Extravaganza. All right? All right. Well, let's go now to November 30th of 1952. At that time, Jack Benny was being sponsored by a cigarette company, but we won't hear those commercials. I promise you that.
The Jack Benny Program, transcribed. Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, immediately after this program, Jack Benny does his television show. Meanwhile, let's go back to last Thursday and show you how our gang spent Thanksgiving. Our scene opens in Jack's home in Beverly Hills.
Narland Day, I am the one. Thanksgiving comes and goes, but I'm never done.
Rochester.
I'm working all the time. I'm nothing but a one-man assembly line.
Mario, what's come over you? You've been singing all day today.
Well, I'm happy, boss. Here it is Thanksgiving. I could have been born a turkey.
You wouldn't have liked that, huh?
No, I couldn't stand being in an oven undressed and people looking in at me every few minutes.
I know. Say, Rochester, I'm going to Miss Livingston's house for a Thanksgiving party, so will you help me get dressed? I'm going formal.
Okay, but if I were you, I'd change my mind about wearing that old tuxedo.
Why, what'd you do to it?
Oh, it's nothing I did, boss. But the last time I went to get it, the closet was full of moths.
Moths? Oh, my goodness. Were they eating my tuxedo?
Eating it? They didn't even look up when I came in.
Well, do you think the holes will show?
I don't know, but the wind is blowing. Face it, boss. Face it.
Well, I don't care. I'm still going to wear them.
Hello, Jack.
Oh, hello, Mary.
The whole gang is here. When are you coming over?
Pretty soon. And, Mary, I got a surprise for you. I'm going to dress formal.
Formal? But, Jack, that tuxedo of yours is so old, it's green.
Mary, my tuxedo isn't green.
Okay, but stay away from the salad bowl. You may get stabbed with a fork.
Oh, stop, will you?
Jack, the reason I called you is, well, I've been so busy getting the dinner ready for you and the gang, I forgot to get some flowers. So I thought maybe you'd stop over at the florist and bring me some.
Okay, Mary. I'll bring you half a dozen roses.
Only a half dozen? But, Jack, they don't cost so much.
Well, no, the roses alone don't, Mary, but you're going to the expense of the entire dinner. Why should you spend any more? You know, after all, you're doing enough.
Jack, I meant for you to buy the roses.
Oh. Well, Mary, you didn't have to beat around the bush. Why didn't you come right out and say so? Of course I'll bring them. Goodbye. I'll get a Rochester. When you say I beg your pardon, then I'll come back to you. When you ask me to.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Well, hello, Mr. Kitchen. Mr. Kitzel, what brings you here?
I was passing by and I stopped to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's nice of you. Come on in.
Thank you. Wait till I tie this leash.
Oh, you got your dog with you?
No, my turkey. I'm taking it out for a walk.
Mr. Kitzel, you're taking a turkey for a walk?
A long walk. Why? By the time we get home, she'll be so glad to lay down, the rest will be easy.
Oh, well, tell me, Mr. Kitzel, are you going to have much company at your Thanksgiving dinner?
My wife's relatives.
Oh, just your wife's relatives?
Just. Ooh. You should have so many listeners.
How many are going to be there?
My wife's mother and father, her sister Claudette, her three brothers, one of her aunts, two of her nephews, and a distant cousin from Wyoming.
Wyoming?
Wild Bill Shapiro.
Wild Bill Shapiro?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a cowboy?
No, a used car dealer.
Your wife really, really has a big family. Do they always come to your house for Thanksgiving dinner?
Unfortunately, yes. And this time they came early.
When did they come?
In 1947.
Mr. Kitzel, you're joking.
My. Well, I got to be going, Mr. Benny. Goodbye.
So long, Mr. Kitzel, and a happy Thanksgiving.
I'll force myself.
You'll make it. Goodbye. Imagine so many relatives. Oh, my goodness, look what time it is. Rochester, help me get dressed now. I'm late for Miss Livingston's party. Gee, I'll bet the whole gang is there already having a wonderful time.
It's your turn to sing.
Not me.
I'll tell you what, Mary. Let's sing a number together.
Yeah, go ahead, kids. The Sportsman Quartet will join you.
So you met someone who set you back on your heels. Goody, goody. So you met someone and now you know how it feels. Goody, goody.
So you gave her your heart too.
Yeah, just as I gave mine to you.
And she broke it in little pieces.
I was a mess.
Now how do you do? So you lie awake just singing the blues all night. Goody, goody. So you think that love's a barrel of dynamite. Hooray and hallelujah. You had it coming to ya. Goody, goody for you.
Goody, goody for me.
And I hope you're satisfied, you rascal of you. Everybody's gonna have a fine time tonight. Goody, goody. With song and dance, the party has started right. Be happy and go lucky. Smoke Luckies from Kentucky. Goody, goody for you.
Goody, goody for you.
Yes, goody, goody for me.
Goody, goody for me.
Swell idea, you're bringing the whole band here to Mary's house.
Well, I thought it'd be kind of nice to have some music.
Bob, I don't mind your band being here, but your boys have a lot of nerve putting one of my best dishes on the piano for an ashtray.
What ashtrays? That's for tips.
Tips? What a gang.
Say, Mary, when do we eat?
Not till Jack gets here.
Well, Mary, I don't care for myself, but I wish you'd feed the boys in the band. They're starving.
Well, can't they hold out?
Well, I don't think so. Gee, I just passed him some crackers and Bagby ate my wristwatch.
No.
Yeah, he thought the strap was a long anchovy.
Well, Bob, we'll eat in just about a few minutes.
I hope so. I've been here ever since 6:30 this morning.
6:30 this morning? Dennis, how come you got here so early?
Well, I got to come by bus and I wanted to make sure I'd be here on time.
Well, Dennis, how far do you live from here?
3 miles.
Well, if you only live 3 miles away, why did you start out so early?
Who knew I'd take the right bus?
Well, then you did take the right bus.
It must have been. It got me to San Diego in time to catch the plane back here.
Dennis. You took a bus to San Diego and then flew back here to Los Angeles. Why'd you do that?
Well, the only way I know how to get to your house is from the airport.
Oh, fine. Don, you better take Dennis home tonight.
Yeah, sure, Murray. What time do you want to go, Dennis?
Oh, anytime, Don. Our plane doesn't leave for San Diego till midnight.
Dennis, do your mother and father celebrate Thanksgiving?
No.
I didn't think so.
Mary, when the food's all ready, let me know, and I'm going to help you serve it.
Well, thank you, Bob, but it won't be necessary. I've hired a butler for the day. I'll get it.
I can't believe anything but love.
Oh, hello, Jack. What took you so long?
I don't know, but it's about time.
I'll tell you what took me so long, Mary. I had to stop for the flowers. Here you are, Mary.
Well, thank you.
Is everybody here?
Sure, they're in the living room. Let's go in. Jack, you did wear that old tuxedo, didn't you?
Oh, it's not so old. Hiya, fellas. Hello, Bob.
Hiya, Jack. Wow, say, that is original.
What?
Oh, a tuxedo made out of chlorophyll.
It is not made out of chlorophyll.
Well, it could use a little.
Never mind. It's a perfectly good suit. There's nothing wrong with it.
Well, I've got one just like it.
You see?
I wear it in all the St. Patrick's Day parades.
Dennis, do me a favor. Don't be on my side. Now, go sit down.
Thanks. I've been here ever since 6:30.
He thinks I'm going to ask him why. He's crazy. For $1 million, I'm not going to go through what happened 3 weeks ago.
Well, say, Jack. Jack, you should have been here a few minutes ago. I did a tap dance.
You did, eh? Well, you kids must have been having a lot of fun.
Yeah, gee, it's great getting together on Thanksgiving like this.
You said it, Bob. And this year, you know, we should all be thankful. I know I am. See, when I get up in the morning and I hear the birds singing, I got the beautiful moonlight at night, I get all the fresh air I need, all the sunshine I want.
So far, it hasn't cost you a dime.
What are you complaining about? You got your flowers, didn't you? Now, let's not stand around arguing. What we need is entertainment.
That's right. Say, Dennis, it'll be a little while before we eat. So how about a song?
Yeah, come on, Dennis. How about it, huh?
Come on, Denny. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's about time somebody asked me. I've been here ever since 6:30.
I'm not going to ask him why.
Jack, while Dennis is singing, will you mix the salad?
Sure, Mary, but let me wear your apron. I don't want to get my tuxedo dirty.
Okay. Here you are.
Thanks. Now, Dennis, go ahead and sing your... I'll get it, Mary. I'll get the door. Hold the song till I come back, kid. When you say I beg your pardon, then I'll come back to you. When you ask me to... Yes?
How do you do? Is this Miss Livingston's residence?
Yes, it is.
Well, Miss Livingston is expecting me for Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, well, come right in. You got here just in time. The fun's just starting.
How nice.
Here, let me take your hat.
Thank you.
Your coat?
Thank you.
Now, follow me. Hey, kids! Oh, pardon me. I didn't introduce myself. I'm Jack Benny.
How do you do? I'm the new butler.
Hey, kids! The butler?
Yes. Are you the downstairs maid?
I happen to be a guest here. I'm wearing this apron because I don't want to get salad dressing on my chlorophyll. I mean my tuxedo. If you're the butler, the kitchen is right through that door.
Thank you.
Jack, who is at the door?
Nobody.
Well, whose coat and hat are you carrying?
Oh, darn it, they're your butler's. He just came in. All right. Go ahead and sing, Dennis.
Well, Mr. Benny, I'm going to introduce a new song, and if you like it, maybe you'll want to use it on your television show.
Maybe. Let's hear it. Hey, Krovny.
Yes, sir.
Krovny, we're ready to... Crowley, why did you come in here barefooted? Where are your shoes?
I'm sorry. I took them off by mistake.
What?
I used to work in a winery.
Stop with the joke. Just bring in the food.
All right.
What a butler. I still can't understand what made you hire him.
Your dinner is served. Here's the turkey.
Gee, that turkey looks good.
Jack, will you do the carving?
Sure, I love to carve. Give me that knife. Mary, what do you want, white meat or dark meat?
White meat, please.
How about you, Dennis?
Well, I'll have a drumstick.
Okay. Now, Don, would you like the white meat, dark meat, a leg, or a wing?
Yes, thank you, with mashed potatoes.
What do you want?
Have you tried your knife and fork?
Yes, and they're delicious.
What? Yeah, he eats everything. Wristbands, jewelry, shoehorns.
How do you like that?
Oh, Miss Livingston, shall I serve the hot biscuits now?
Yes, Felton.
I'll have one.
Very well. There.
Crowley, don't throw the biscuits.
Certainly not.
Why don't you stand closer to the table?
I've been watching these people eat, and I don't want to get any on me.
Crowley, your job is just to serve the food and not to antagonize the guests.
Yes, madam.
Say, Mr. Benny, how about making a speech?
Yeah, go ahead, Jack. Say something.
Well...
You know, this is the first time we've all had dinner together in a long time, so go ahead, make a speech.
Okay. Well, kids, it's sure nice for all of us to be here on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, a day set aside where families can get together in common bond and humbly give thanks in a spirit of brotherly love.
Hear, hear.
Thank you. Yes, Thanksgiving. A day that was originally started by the Pilgrim Fathers. The Pilgrim Fathers. That stalwart, staunch group of men and women who left their native shore.
Don, stop eating.
And after many months of suffering, had their hardship rewarded by safely landing at Cape Cod in the year of 1620. Yes, our Pilgrim Fathers.
Jack.
Our Pilgrim Fathers.
Jack.
What is it, Don?
The Pilgrims didn't land at Cape Cod. They landed at Plymouth Rock.
No, Don. It was Cape Cod.
Jack, any schoolboy knows it was Plymouth Rock. How can you say Cape Cod?
Don, don't tell me anything about history. I went to school, too. I say the Pilgrims landed at Cape Cod.
They didn't land at Cape Cod. It was Plymouth Rock.
Don, they landed at Cape Cod, and if you don't...
Jack, put down that carving knife.
Oh, pardon me.
Beast.
Don, this is Thanksgiving, so let's not quarrel. You think it was Plymouth Rock, I know it was Cape Cod. You can take my word for it, I know what I'm talking about.
Well, so do I. It was Plymouth Rock.
It was Cape Cod.
Oh, for heaven's sake, cut it out. Crowley, serve the dessert, will you?
I will if those two gentlemen will get off the table.
I will if he will.
I'll have some more of that white meat.
That's my leg.
You should have told me sooner. I put some gravy on it.
Well, wipe it off. Now, Don Wilson, I think it's awful for you to come here on Thanksgiving, accept Mary's hospitality, and start a big argument like this.
I didn't start the argument. You did. And you can ask anybody, and they'll tell you the Pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock.
I don't care who you ask. I still say they landed at Cape Cod.
Jack, for goodness sake, finish the speech you started.
I'll do it if everybody will shut up. Now, as I was saying, friends, we're gathered here on Thanksgiving Day in a spirit of friendship.
I gathered at 6:30.
friendship, a word that in itself represents that binding tie between all people. Let's try, friends. Let's try to keep the feeling that is so prevalent on this day throughout the entire year. So whenever you feel discouraged, just think of the spirit of those pilgrims who sailed across the ocean deep and finally landed at Cape Cod. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back in just a minute because I want to tell you about my television show, which goes on immediately after this program.
Boss, you haven't got time to read. You're supposed to do your television show in 30 seconds.
I know, Rochester. I'm not reading. I'm just looking something up in this history book. Here it is. In the year of 1620, the pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock. Gee, it wasn't Cape Cod. It was Plymouth Rock. Don Wilson was right. Well, I hate to do this, but I guess I'll just have to call him up and fire him. He's so smart, he can get another job. See you in a few seconds, folks.
John Tackerberry, Al Gordon, Al Goldman, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Martin.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
Rolling through the Radio Vault program, we are... And that was from 1952, November of 1952. As we roll through Thanksgiving week, right? Background sounds today are none other than Ramsey Lewis. We've got Duffy's Tavern waiting in the wings. Stand by for Duffy here in Radio Vault at 89.3 WHFR.
Join us every Sunday from 4 to 7 p.m. for a special themed 3-hour block of music on WHFR Presents. Each week, one of our WHFR DJs will present a special curated playlist revolving around a particular theme. You never know what you're going to hear. So check it out every Sunday from 4 to 7 p.m. For more information on what's to come this and every Sunday on WHFR Presents, visit our website at www.whfr.fm. That's WHFR Presents, Sundays from 4 to 7 p.m.
It's Friday night, so we take you now to Duffy's Tavern, starring Archie himself, Ed Gardner.
Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet to eat. Archie the manager speaking. Duffy ain't here. Hello, Duffy. Merry Christmas to you. By the way, we got 2 more Christmas cards tonight. Well, one from Colucci, the fruit peddler. Yeah, very pretty card, too. It's got his coat of arms. 2 crossed bananas with a tomato rampant in the background. Yeah, and the other one's from Cavendish the Undertaker. Yeah, it says, wishing you a joyous and merry Christmas and a short... but Happy New Year. P.S. Drop in and see our new Christmas wrappings. Yeah, you ought to be here, Duffy. Already the joint is reeking with Christmassy odor. Yeah, we're even putting on a show tonight, the Christmas Carol. Well, it's an old play by Charles Dickens. Dickens, as in go too deep. He's a very famous writer, Duffy. Wrote David Copperfield, the Picnic Papers. another one about the dame, you know. Oliver's Twist. Well, look, Duffy, I'm busy now. I got to rewrite the Christmas carol. Yeah, well, I got to fix it up, you know. Some of the grammar is a little old-fashioned. I'll call you back, Duffy. Merry Christmas. Okay. Hey, Eddie.
Yes?
Look, it's Christmas. When do you say we kind of infest the joint with a little Christmas flavor? Leave us put some mistletoes around and some holly wreaths, huh?
Oh, we've practically got a holly wreath already. The customers at the bar is turning red, and the ones that just finished eating are turning green.
Eddie, will you cut out the whiz me? I'm serious. Now, what could we do to make the joint a little more Christmassy?
We could get a nice snow effect by whitewashing the sawdust.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Sure, and I could trot around under the table with a little cask of brandy tied around my neck.
Yeah, that'd be cute, like one of them St. Bernstein dogs. Good old Christmas. By the way, I wonder what Duffy is going to give us for Christmas this year.
Yeah, I wonder. Hey, you know, I kind of got my heart set on the Hope Diamond.
You hope. What did he give you in last year again?
A monogrammed dustpan.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah. It makes a nice set with the monogrammed broom he gave me the year before.
Look, Eddie, don't be bitter. After all, Duffy ain't really such a bad guy.
No, he ain't such a bad guy.
No.
Well, so long, this is where I get off.
Eddie, you better remember that Christmas dinner he gave us last year. The celery and the chestnuts and the cranberries.
And the cover charge.
I was kidding. That big whole roast pig with the apple in its mouth. Hello, Finnegan. Where's the apple?
What apple?
Skip, it's just a little picture you happened to conjure into my mind. Anyways, Merry Christmas to you, Finnegan.
Merry Christmas to you, Archie. By the way, that brings up a subject.
What?
Archie, I'd like to ask you a question.
What's the question?
Well, Arch, promise me you'll tell me the truth.
I promise.
Okay. Arch, is there a Santa Claus?
Well, bless your heart, Finnegan. What brought this on?
I was over to Macy's this morning, and on the fifth floor, there was a tall, skinny Santa Claus, and I get down to the third floor, and there's a short, fat Santa Claus. Frankly, Arch, I'm beginning to smell a rat. Now, tell me, will you?
Look, I don't want to be no stool pigeon. I'd rather you'd ask somebody else.
So, who am I going to ask, Arch? Oh, you asked me little brother Wilford, and he says there ain't no Santa Claus, but what does he know? He's only a child.
Look, you put me in a very bad position.
Well, you gotta tell me, Arch. I'm old enough to know. And I'm gonna find out sooner or later anyway.
Finnegan, please, I'd rather that somebody else.
Oh, come on, Arch. You told me about the stork, didn't you? Believe me, this is important to me.
Well, why? Why is it so important?
Well, I ain't smart enough to keep a job. I can't read. I can't write. I don't like girls. If there's no Santa Claus, what have I got to live for?
Well, okay, Finnegan, you asked for it. You see, this Santa Claus thing started, you see, there's the birds and the bees and the flowers.
Yeah.
And, Finnegan, turn your eyes the other way, will you? That's better. Now you ask me if there's a Santa Claus. So prepare yourself, Finnegan.
Go ahead, Arch. I can take it.
Finnegan, there is no...
Arch!
No truth to the rumor that there is no Santa Claus. There is a Santa Claus.
Oh, boy, what a load up in me mind. Santa Claus, did you come here?
These are adults. Hello? Oh, just a second. Eddie, it's your girlfriend, Sonia Jones.
Oh, my. The first official sign of Christmas. Hello. Oh, hello, Sonia. Yeah, Merry Christmas. Huh? Sure, I love you, sugar. What you doing? Is you alone, baby? Ain't that a man's voice out here? Oh, you're listening to the news on the radio. I just saw you. How long has Gable Heater been calling you honey? I'm just suspicious. Yeah, baby. I know I'm always in your heart. Yeah. But, honey, who's that that's always in your apartment? Well, Merry Christmas, honey. Yeah. By the way, extend the season's greetings to Gable Heater for me. That is bad news tonight.
Look, Eddie, why do you let that Sonya kick you around like this? What are you, man or your mouse?
Pass the cheese.
Say, Archie.
Oh, hello, Miss Duffy. Hey, what's the matter with you today?
Why?
Well, you look even more battered than usual.
Gee, Archie, those department stores are terrible. You try to get near a counter and you take your life in your hands. They push you around, tear your stockings, step on your toes, gouge your eyes out.
Well, what were you trying to buy?
Nothing, I was just browsing.
Well, that starts our conversation this evening on a nice idiotic basis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, incidentally, I hear you're going to put on a Christmas show tonight.
Yes.
Well, needless to say, you'll want me to sing.
On the contrary, equally needless. You and that foghorn falsetto. That off-coloratura. You are not going
now
to...
Now listen here, you big dope.
Look, Miss Duffy, leave us not fight tonight. It's the Christmas season, and I'm in too good a mood. In fact, I'm so happy, I'd like to kiss you. Hmm? Blindfolded, of course. Okay, you can sing in the show. Mr. Melnick.
Yeah, Arch?
Look, we're going to need some Christmassy background music for the show tonight. Are you equipped?
We're loaded, Jackson.
In what way, Phil? How are you loaded?
I got a kid named Robert Maxwell that's murder on this Christmas stuff. A harp player.
Harp player, huh? Good idea. Duffy'll love it. It's his native music. Okay, we'll put the kid in the show.
Say, Archie.
Yes, Mr. Miller.
Can you use me in the Christmas show?
Well, yeah, maybe you could announce it. Give me a sample, for instance. What would you say?
Well, I don't know. Maybe something like this. Ladies and gentlemen, Duffy's Tavern takes great pleasure in presenting its Christmas show, starring that famous hair grooming preparation, Vitalis.
Okay, Eddie, we're all set. Now, give me that bong starter. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as you all know, each year we present our centennial Christmas show. Now, that moment has just become ripe. So, I want you all to enjoy the show. Applaud when you like. Be merry. Have laughs. In other words, feel free to vent your spleen in any way you wish. No further ado, leave us on with the show. Carry on, Mr. Miller.
Thank you. Duffy's Tavern brings you Christmas music. Christmas drama.
But Santa Claus, suppose my husband comes home and finds you here.
Christmas humor.
Do you think we will have a white Christmas, darling?
Well, it will if it don't rain, dear. And now on with the show. For our first act this evening, we give you that beloved little entertainer, your waiter and mine, Eddie Green. To know him is to tip him. Take it, Eddie.
Ah, you better watch out. Better not cry. Better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming. Coming on down to Harlem Town. Oh, my. Hey! And you got to find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming with his bag full of jive, Mr. Five by Five. Sees you when you're sleeping, and he knows how good you've been. So
if you meet him face to face, say, solid old man, give me some skin. He's got no reins there, he ain't got no sled, but he's on his way and he's coming instead on the after such a freaker and a Saturday.
Thank you very much, Eddie Green. Now, for our next act, we reach into our Christmas grab bag, and what do we pull out? None other than Mr. Robert Maxwell, the world's greatest harpist. Okay, Robert, take us on a Miller side with a repeat hubcap and send a salad with that old riff-raff sad sack, kid. Okay, take it away, Robert Maxwell. You gotta give the guy credit. He plays the thing with his bare hands. What? Mrs. Duffy says she would like to have a little more Christmas schmaltz, huh? Okay, boss. Look, Matty, can the kid jive out a little more dig beat with a rip on his schmaltz side? What? Oh, I see him talking to a square. Duffy says he would like something a little more befitting to the occasion of the season.
Well, how about White Christmas?
Okay, let him chop it away in a gut bucket. That thing ever has any little ukuleles, name one after me. We're going to have to continue our cruise down Santa Claus Lane. We next hear from that great singing duet, Clifton Finnegan and Miss Duffy. Better known as half a wit and a near miss. This is Third Avenue's answer to the atomic bomb. Okay, take it away.
Play that
ring. Oh, you listening?
Play that
ring. Oh, you listening?
Oh, you listening?
No, 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 no.
Finnegan and Miss Duffy, you sounded like Jeanette McDonald with a half Nelson on Eddie. And now, we have a surprise act for you. Mr. Marvin Miller, our genial master of ceremonies, will beleaguer us with a poem. Go right ahead, Mr. Miller.
Was the night before Christmas, and all through the nation, people had chest colds and that stuffed-up sensation.
Just a second. Wait a minute. I think I can finish that for you. With his sleigh full of minute rub, over housetops and spires, came Santa Claus shouting, "On, Bristol, on, Myers." Huh? Okay, Mr. Mullen, you may now lapse into prose, if you please. Okay, Mr. Miller, you may now announce the big piece of resistance.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, we now present the Christmas Carol, written by the Dickens boys, Charles and Archie. As our scene opens, we find Ebenezer Scrooge, played by Archie, preparing to go to bed in his miserable little room on Piccadilly Square. England is agog with Yuletide spirit. But for miserable old Ebenezer Scrooge, there is no Christmas. At the moment, we find him in an ugly mood, writing in his diary.
Dear diary, had a pleasant day today. Bankrupted 3 widows, foreclosed 12 mortgages, and drove 9 families out into the snow. Barefooty, of course.
Oh, Mr. Scrooge, sire.
Oh, it is my butler, Godfrey. What do you want, my man Godfrey?
It's getting mighty cold in here. Do you think we can afford to throw another twig on the fire?
Heavens to Betsy, man, you threw one on last Friday. Do you think these twigs grow on trees?
It's getting cold in here. There's icicles on the window.
So what? Ain't you never seen icicles on a window before?
Not on the inside, sire. Oh, before I forget, the Widow Scratchit called this morning.
Scratchit. Is she the widow of Willie Scratchit? I mean, Willie Scratchit?
Yes. She's the one you work to death squeezing limes in your lime house. She said you promised to pay her a pension of 2 pence a week.
Well, get rid of her, Godfrey. If I have to go around paying 2 pence a week to every widow in Wessex, I wouldn't have a pair of pence to my name. Besides, it ain't my fault if that husband of hers didn't save nothing out of what I gave him every week.
But, sire, how much can one save out of 10 lashes a week?
Bah, humbug.
But the widow's downstairs starving, sire. Can't we at least give her a piece of bread?
Oh, leave her starve. And poor people is all alike.
Greedy, huh, boss?
Yeah. Give them bread today and tomorrow they're back asking for water.
Yeah, but, sire, this is Christmas.
Christmas, how I hate it. Christmas trees, presents, happy people, goodwill. I hate Christmas.
But why do you feel this way, sire?
I'll tell you why, Knave. Because I am a black-hearted, tight-fisted, bitter, stingy old skinflint. No, Duffy, not you, me. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, Godfrey. I think I shall hie me hence to bed.
Very good, sire.
That's sire. Yes, Godfrey. I've done a hard day's dirty work today. It'll feel good to crawl in between them nice, clean sheets of newspaper. Well, good night, my man Godfrey.
Good night, sire.
Don't forget to blow out the twig.
Yes, sire.
Not so hard. God, you fool. That twig's got the last assault date tomorrow.
Sorry, sire.
Now to close one eye and get some sleep. Yeah, got a big day tomorrow. Got to sprinkle banana peels on the front steps of the old lady's home. Got to remember to get them chimes made softer. No sense in letting the neighbors hear the time for nothing.
Ebenezer Scrooge. Ebenezer Scrooge. Wake up.
Who's calling me? Who are you?
I am the spirit of Christmas.
Humbug.
I have come to show you the suffering that your stinginess is causing. I'm going to take you to the house of the Widow Scratchit. The next voice you hear will be that of the Widow Scratchit herself.
Oh, Tiny Tim. Tiny Tim.
Coming, Mother.
Close the door, Tim. The flies are coming in, and we haven't got enough to eat ourselves.
Mama, I am weak with hunger.
I know it, my poor boy.
Ain't we got nothing in the house? Even a crusted swyback?
Not even a herring. Tim, land sakes, the floor is cold. Where are your shoes? Come on, son, speak up. Where are your shoes? Tim, stop picking that leather out of your teeth and tell me, where are your shoes?
Of course I did, Mama. I am only a little tot. My body must have nourishment. Mama, why is Ebenezer Scrooge so wicked?
Oh, he isn't really wicked, son. He's just socially maladjusted. He hates to part with a buck.
Oh, yeah? Well, I still say it's wicked of him to starve a nice little boy like me to death. Did you hear that, Ebenezer Scrooge? You have caused all this suffering with your stinginess.
Spirit, you got me dead to rights. All of a sudden, I behold how low I have sank.
Well, Ebenezer, what are you going to do about it?
I'm
going
to give 50,000 pounds to Tiny Tim and Mrs. Scratchit. And the rest of my money, I will give to nothing but orphan asylums. Every one of them, from Essex to Wessex, from Wessex to Sussex, and as far north as Norsex. And I want to thank you, Spirit of Christmas. You have lighted up the way for me. You have learned me that it is better to give than to receive.
Hello? Mrs. Duffy? Huh? He's over in the corner crying like a baby? Oh, get him over to the phone. We'll try to cheer him up. Come on, let's see. Sing him a song, huh?
Yeah.
Hello, Duffy. Look, stop crying, will you? Well, I know, and we love you, too, but Christmas ain't supposed to be sad. Duffy, cheer up. Christmas is supposed to be gay. It's holly wreaths and Santa Claus and Prancer and Dancer and Dunder and Pilsner and... Jingle bells, Duffy.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in one horse open sleigh.
Just a second. Hey, does that make you feel better, Duffy? Huh? What a softy. He's crying harder than ever.
Leave Duffy's Tavern for this evening, but let's meet here again at this same time next Friday night.
The
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford College. Henry Ford College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. For more information on admittance, financial aid, and class schedules, visit www.hfcc.edu today. That's www.hfcc.edu. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford College.
If you're 19 or older with certain underlying medical conditions such as asthma or diabetes, you can get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease that can disrupt your life for weeks. If you're 65 or older, it is also recommended you get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia. No matter the season, talk to your doctor about vaccination today and learn more at lung.org/protect yourself. A message from the American Lung Association in collaboration with Pfizer.
All right. This is Radio Vault, of course. We're ready for our final hour of enlightening entertainment, seasonally friendly entertainment. As I promised you, we're going to do some Life of Riley that... some of which we've never played on the air. So let's go back to 1944, November 12. Junior's big football game here at 89.3 WHFR Dearborn.
But wait, now you're going to hear something really gruesome.
He is, folks. You laughed with him when he played the Marine in the movie Wake Island. And soon you'll see him with Alan Ladd and Brian Donlevy in 2 years before the mast. He's Hollywood's magnificent mug.
I came up the hard way. When I was 6 years old, the doctor discovered I had an extremely high IQ. But luckily, I grew out of it.
The American Meat Institute presents William Bendix in The Life of Riley. And now, on behalf of all those engaged in supplying meat to the nation, the American Meat Institute presents The Life of Riley. Right now, Riley and his friend Jim Gillis are talking about the big football game of the season, which to them means the battle next Friday between the Green Goats of the John J. Boskowitz Junior High School and the Maroon Maulers of Mazeppa Junior High. Listen to the enlightening debate.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Listen, Riley, I'm telling you, like a friend, them Boskowitz Green Goats ain't got a chance against the Mazeppa Maulers.
Yeah, who says so?
My boy Elmer says so. He ought to know. He's captain of the Mazeppas.
The trouble with you, Gillis, is you're prejudiced. Family loyalty's okay, but just because your boy's on a team, that don't mean the team is going to win.
Maybe so, Riley. But what makes you so sure the Green Goats is going to win?
Because my boy is on the Green Goats. And he ain't just a beefy fullback like your Elmer. Junior's quarterback on the Goats. They call him Spark Plug Riley.
I heard his spark plugs is full of carbon, too.
Well, not my boy. Junior's been giving his team some trick plays that are absolutely impossible.
My boys' team don't need no plays. They just take the ball and walk down the field with it, rushing off them green goats like flies.
Yeah.
You
want to bet? I'll bet you $1 million that the green goats win.
How much?
$2.
Ah, Riley, I wouldn't take your money on a sure thing. Put up your dough.
It ain't right to bet on school sports, or I would.
Come on, come on. Let's see the color of your money.
You can take my word for it. It's green. But it ain't clean football when you bet money on it.
Backing down, huh? Well, I don't blame you.
I ain't backing down. But instead of betting cash, I'll bet you a trip to the Bijou movie theater that my boy's team wins.
Let's make it interesting, Riley. I see you that trip to the movies, and raise you a dinner.
Okay, we'll have dinner at Luigi's Spaghetti Heaven and Meatball Mardi Gras. Gillis, I see you at the movies and the dinner, and I'm throwing in our wives.
It's a bet. They go, too.
In a taxi.
I see the taxi and raise you flowers for the ladies.
And a new hat for me to be wearing.
I'll be wearing the new hat. Okay, you're on, Riley.
Okay. And the loser pays off right after the game. Movies, dinner, flowers, taxi, and a new hat for the winner.
Right.
Loser pays off. And Gillis, when I say loser, I do mean you. So, Peg, I foxed Gillis into a deal where he's taking us out for a big evening. Free, gratis, and for nothing.
Well, that's fine, Riley, but how do you know this'll all be on Gillis?
Oh, that's very simple. With them trick plays of Junior's, his team can't lose.
I'm not so sure. Junior's been acting kind of gloomy tonight.
Oh, athletes always get worried. Where is he?
In the next room at the desk.
Well, I'll go in and give him a little pep talk.
A plus B. Oh, hello, Pop.
Hello, Junior.
A plus B over C minus D equals X.
Hey, that's a real tricky little play you got on paper there.
Yeah, it's tricky, all right.
Only if I was you, I wouldn't send X through the center of the line between A and B. I'd make C throw a forward pass.
This ain't football, Pop. It's algebra.
Algebra? Junior, stop straining your brain with that stuff. You ought to be in bed resting your skull for practice tomorrow.
I can't help it, Pop. I gotta hand this algebra in to Miss Jessup tomorrow. And if I don't, she'll keep me after school, and then I can't practice.
You gotta practice. How many algebra examples she give you to do?
50.
50? Where's that teacher's school spirit? How long you been at that algebra tonight?
Half an hour.
How many out of the 50 you got left to do?
50.
That's sabotage. If it takes you a half hour to do one, it takes 2 half hours in an hour. It'll take you 100 hours to do 50. That algebra teacher ought to take arithmetic. Don't you know you can't get done tonight?
I gotta get it done tonight.
I'm gonna phone her right now.
Oh, no, Pop. You better not.
Now, why not? She can't bluff me. I like to hear how she thinks a football player can do 50 algebras a night and still make any first downs.
Well, Pop, she didn't exactly just give me this algebra to do all tonight.
Well, you said it had to be all in by tomorrow.
Yeah, but she kind of handed it out the first of the month. I kind of forgot it until tonight.
Junior, leave this be a lesson to you. Don't put off till tomorrow what you should have done last month.
Oh, yeah, but...
Junior, look, I work at a war plant. If I didn't do my job right last month, putting in every rivet I was supposed to, you know what would be happening today? American pilots would be flying over Germany without planes.
Oh, yeah, but, Pop...
Look at you. Stuck with 50 problems or no practice. And me with a bet on your team.
It's wrong to bet, Pop.
Don't change the subject. I had a better backwater in front of Jim Gillis. Now your team's got to win or I'll get the ha-ha. Come on, get busy on that algebra and hand it in tomorrow so as you can practice.
Oh, right. Gosh, Pop, you just proved it couldn't be done by tonight.
Oh, certainly it can be done. All you got to do is do it faster.
Okay, but I won't be any good at practice tomorrow. And if the quarterback's no good, the team goes to pieces.
Yeah. And if the team goes to pieces, they lose the game. And I got another mouth to feed. Jim Gillis and his wife, too.
You have to buy them dinner?
Yeah. And can they eat? If you leave an arm on a table, Gillis starts putting ketchup on it. And... Junior, my head is made up. Give me that algebra book.
What are you going to do, Pop?
I'm going to do this homework, and you're going to bed.
Oh, gosh, thanks, Pop, but can you do algebra?
Can I do algebra? I'll breeze through them 50 problems like nothing.
In the morning. Aren't you through with that algebra yet?
Well, no, not quite. I had 50 problems to do, but I'm at the home stretch.
How many have you left to do?
45.
Oh, Riley. You only did 5 in 6 hours? Oh, is it very hard?
Well, you know, in algebra, they ring in a lot of letters on you. I get along okay with A, B, C, and Y, Z, but they keep asking me to find X.
What do they do with X when they find it? I sort of forgot.
Well, I don't know, but they think they gotta have it then. It's tough to find X because it's what they call an unknown quantity. How am I gonna find something when a guy that wrote the book admits he don't even know what it is?
That's what algebra teaches, dear. How to discover something you don't know.
Yeah. Well, ever since I was in school, they've been looking for X. If they ain't found it in all this time, I don't know how they expect me to get it in one night.
Oh, maybe you better get your sleep, Riley.
No, nothing doing. I'm no quitter. I'm doing this stuff if it takes me all night. And Junior's turning it in the morning so as he can practice and win that game. What time did you say it was, Peg?
3:05.
I'll bet that money mad Gillis is sleeping like a log.
Hi, Stumpy!
Hiya, Junior.
Don't forget practice today and right after.
Okay.
Secret signals and trick plays. Tell a team.
Gosh, listen, Junior. I don't know if I can get to practice. I'm afraid Miss Jessup is going to keep me in on account I haven't got my algebra.
Stumpy, you should have done your homework.
Oh, yeah? I suppose you got yours done.
Sure, I got them all done.
Duh.
You want to see them? Okay. Look in my book.
Well, I'll be a monkey's uncle.
Hey, Walleyes, look it. Riley's got all his algebra done.
Yeah? Hey, Phyllis, come on. Riley's got his algebra.
Now you've done it, Stumpy. They're all going to copy my answers.
So what? You don't want one of your own team kept it after school, do you?
Oh, no, but...
Yeah, Riley, nice work. Come on, Gosh. Let's get Riley's answers down fast, and we all get to practice today.
Come on, Gosh. Hey, wait, fellas. I ain't giving the whole school my answers.
Of course not. We'll keep them private.
Yeah, just between us 11 guys and the team.
You home from work?
Oh, my, you look tired.
Oh, what a day I had. I had to work with one hand. I used the other to prop open my eyes.
No wonder, after being up all night doing Junior's homework.
I got it done, didn't I? All 50 answers, neat and good. Gillis kept asking me, what was I so sleepy for? Did I burn him up?
Oh, how?
I told him I dreamed I won the bet, and when he was paying off with dinner, I ate so much fancy food, it gave me a nightmare. Boy, I got that Gillis worried. I hope I can keep awake until it's time to go to sleep.
Well, why don't you take a nap before dinner?
Well, I guess I will. But wake me up as soon as Junior gets home from practice.
Well, he is home.
What?
Uh-huh.
Couldn't have been a very long practice. Hey, Junior, what goes? Why ain't you practicing?
A plus B over Y minus C equals X.
Junior, this is where I came in yesterday. Is that algebra again?
Oh, yeah, Pop. Some more of that Miss Jessup's work.
Junior, did she give you more algebra after you handed in them 50 examples I did last night?
Oh, yes, sir. I handed in my answers, and then the rest of the team handed in their answers, and we was all set to go to practice, and all of a sudden that Miss Jessup says, by an odd coincidence, I find that 11 boys in this class all have the same answers.
So what? 11 boys all know their stuff.
And then she says, by an odd coincidence, these 11 boys are all team.
Oh, is that so? I suppose with her it's a crime to play football, huh?
And then she says, and by an odd coincidence, these 11 boys are the same 11 boys who are getting 50 more problems to do tonight.
What? She can't do that to me?
So we all ought to come home and do algebra instead of practicing.
No practice. After me working all night.
And if we don't have the new 50 done by tomorrow, she says we can't play the game at all. We'll be ineligible.
I've heard enough. That Miss Jessup is a spy from Mazeppa High. She's working for the wrong school. She must have half of Gillis's bet. This is a frame-up.
Oh, gosh, where are you going, Pop?
I'm going to see that Mrs. Jessup and give her some pieces on my mind. I'll give her algebra. Mrs. Jessup, I'll tell her, if A for algebra equals B, we get beat in that game tomorrow, then X is going to be the unknown place where you'll be looking for a new job.
In a moment, we'll see what happens when Riley locks horns with Junior's algebra teacher. And now back to the life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. We left Riley on his way to see Junior's algebra teacher and deliver a lecture on the evils of homework for football players, especially when the father of one of the players stands to lose a bet and eat crow if the team loses tomorrow's big game. As we rejoin Riley now, he is tapping a bit nervously at the door of Miss Jessup's apartment.
Yes?
Good evening, teacher. I, Miss Jessup. Junior Riley is my father. His father. I am.
Oh. Well, do come in, Mr. Riley. I'm always glad to meet the parents of my pupils. I hope you'll excuse all these papers on the floor. I'm doing some homework.
Homework? Who makes you do homework? The principal?
Well, it's my job, Mr. Riley. I have to correct and grade all the homework done by the class. But sit down, do.
Oh, thanks. Miss Jessup, I'm here to say something about Junior's homework.
That's very thoughtful of you. It could be improved.
No, doubtless you are very correct, Miss Jessup. But on the other hand, how about football? And what's with all this algebra? You can't put algebra up on a scoreboard against them Mazeppas tomorrow, Miss Jessup.
Perhaps not, Mr. Riley. Nor can I put a home run on a student's report card.
Home run? Miss Jessup, don't you know nothing about football?
Very little, I confess. I went to a girls' college several years ago.
football is a superfluous adjunct to the curriculum. After all, what is football?
What is curriculum?
I am not averse to helpful exercise, but in the larger game of life, Mr. Riley, algebra is more important than any sport.
Who to?
Pardon me?
I say who to is a more important to. You know, you never see no algebra scores in the newspapers, do you?
No.
You never heard no big cheering section in the grandstand yelling, block that unknown quantity.
I've never heard a cheering section yelling anything.
Miss Jessup, are you kidding? You never saw a football game?
No, Mr. Riley, I'm not kidding.
Miss Jessup, you've been going to school too much. I'm taking you personally to that game tomorrow. May I?
Why, I'd love to go.
Oh, that's swell. Now, listen, you want to see a good game, don't you? You want to see your school win, huh?
I would not be averse to a favorable decision if the boys play at all.
Play at all? They got to play. It's the big game. You ain't going to stick to that fantastic idea of them handing in 50 algebras tomorrow, are you?
I most certainly am.
Oh, have a heart, Miss Jessup. Look, them boys give you 50 algebras today, and you sock them 50 more.
Yes, Mr. Riley. By an odd coincidence, 11 boys with the same set of answers.
So what? Look, there's only one right answer to any one of them gimmicks, am I right?
Certainly.
Okay, now I got you. Everybody that gets the right answer gets the same answer. What's so funny with them 11 being right?
Nothing. That would be fine. But they all had the same answers, and every answer was wrong.
Wrong? My answers, the junior's answers were all wrong?
They were.
What a revolting development this is. Were the answers very wrong?
Fantastically wrong. Oh. You see, Mr. Riley, it was obvious that all the boys had copied their answers from one boy, who, I'm afraid, is not on par mentally with the average 13-year-old child.
He ain't, huh?
I pity his poor parents.
Yeah, especially his father.
I had no choice but to discipline them.
But that team's got to play tomorrow. Listen, why take it out on all of them? Why don't you just punish the boy that gave them all the wrong answers?
I could do that if the boy would confess.
You would?
Yes, because then I could talk to that boy and make him promise to stop spreading ignorance among my pupils.
Okay. The team's got to play, so if you promise just to punish him and let the rest of them play, I'll tell you what boy got the wrong answers.
I promise.
Okay. I'm the boy.
Oh, Mr. Riley, a grown bad.
Well, not quite. I'm still grown. I did Junior's answer, so they all must have taken his. I mean, mine.
I see.
So now you'll have to let the team play and just punish me. I wear a size 7 5/8 dunce cap.
Very well, Mr. Riley. I'll keep my bargain. The team shall play.
Oh, thanks. That's great.
Now, for your punishment, just sign this slip of paper.
Is that all? Oh, sure. Give it here. There you are. It's all signed.
Now, perhaps you'd better read it now that you've signed it. Mr. Riley, I want you to carry out what you promised on that paper.
Oh, sure. Let me see. I hereby agree to attend all classes assigned to me at Adult Night School. But I went out. Hey, nothing doing. Give me back my signature. I can't go to school now. I'm 38. How will it look? I'll never see my wife.
If you want that team to play, you'll report to my algebra class for beginners tomorrow night.
After 25 years, I'm going back to school. What a long recess. Time out.
What's the situation now?
It ain't good.
It isn't good.
You said it. It's rotten. Five minutes to play, 6-0 in favor of the Mazeppas, and we got the ball on our own 1-yard line.
Well, that isn't so bad. All one of our boys has to do now is take the ball and run 99 yards through the other team. That could be done.
Sure, if he was a tank.
Football is so thrilling. I'm glad you brought me, Mr. Riley. And wasn't it sweet of the team to present me with these flowers?
Oh, they appreciate you letting them play. They might have appreciated me who done their algebras for them. After all, a 10-cent cigar only costs 15 or 20 cents.
Ah, but you did the problems wrong.
All right, then. One measly cigarette. They're starting again. Wash them like grapes and pick up the pits. 3 cheers for John J. Boscowitz.
Mr. Riley, I echo those sentiments.
They're lining up. If Junior don't throw a forward pass now, I'll disown him. He's going. It's a beauty. Stumpy's going for it. He's going to fumble.
Oh, I'm so glad. Oh.
No. No, he held it. He's running for a touchdown.
Oh,
now look, if we can kick a conversion, we get an extra point. We win by 1 point.
Oh, I can't keep the figures in my head.
Miss Jessup, you should give up algebra and take up arithmetic. Take my word for it. If the ball goes over that thing that's out there between the posts, it's our game.
Look, isn't that Junior about to kick?
Yeah, my boy Junior.
Block that kick!
No! Here he goes. We win. Have I got a son or have I got a son?
Oh, this is very gratifying. Oh, I must see all the games.
Ah, you're okay, Miss Jessup. You're a good sport. And what a sense of humor.
Humor?
Yeah, that gag you pulled on me about going to night school. For a while there, I thought you meant it. What a killer. Well, I'll be seeing you sometime.
Mr. Riley, you'll be seeing me in my class at night school tonight.
You weren't kidding?
I most certainly was not. You'll be there at 9 o'clock.
Yes, teacher.
Well, here I am, Riley. The taxi's outside with the missus, and I'm here to pay off the bet.
Bet? Oh, yeah, Gillis. You're taking us all to the movies and dinner.
Yeah, right. You know, the ghost was covered with horseshoes, but they won, and I'm paying off. Friday, we said, right yep. after the game, huh? Mm-hmm. Oh, here's your flowers, Mrs. Riley. Come on, Riley, let's go.
You go on, Peg, and take Junior instead of me, huh?
Nah, come on, what's wrong? Oh, listen, here's your new hat, too, Riley. It's the biggest I could get. Size 7 8/8. Hey, what are you doing with all them books in the book scrap?
Oh, I'm getting ready for school.
School? At your age?
Age has got nothing to do with it. It's ignorance that counts. I can't collect my bet tonight because I signed up with Miss Jessup. I got to go to night school. Algebra for beginners.
What do you know? School day. Zero.
Cut it out, Gillis. I ain't no kid. Well, I guess I better go.
Hey, wait a minute. What? What's that sticking out of your pocket?
Oh, that's an avocado.
What for?
That's for the teacher. I couldn't find an apple.
The Rileys will be right back.
Home from school already?
Yeah.
Riley, what are you doing?
My homework.
Homework?
Yeah. I got 50 problems to do.
Oh, Pop, you go to bed. I can sleep tomorrow. I'll do your homework.
You will? Gosh. Thanks, Junior.
Oh, but Riley, 50 problems the first night?
Well, yeah. You see, the teacher caught me in the coat room smoking.
At the very same time for a lot more laughs when Riley becomes a pilgrim and heads for the woods to shoot a Thanksgiving turkey. The Life of Riley stars William Bendix and is sponsored by the American Meat Institute. William Bendix as Riley appears on this program by arrangement with Hal Roach. The Life of Riley was directed by Don Bernard with music by Lou Kozloff and came to you from Hollywood. This is Ken Niles saying, see you next week.
7:30 KECA Los Angeles. Transcribed.
Yeah, come on back to the 50s and 60s every Monday at 2 p.m. Join me, Daddy G, at the Malt Shop for all the blasts from the past that'll bring back those memories of an easier time. That's every Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Be there or be square.
Sounds like a swell time to me. This is Radio Vault. And another Life of Riley from 1944.
Here he is. In the movie Wake Island, he was a Brooklyn Marine. In Abroad with Two Yanks, he's Biff the Private. But tonight, he's just another American citizen looking forward to good old Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, and I got plenty to be thankful for. This year, our family's going to have a turkey filled with chestnut. When I was a kid, we had a chestnut filled with turkey.
The American Meat Institute presents William Bendix in The Life of Riley. And later, during our show, we'll have a special visit from your favorite Hollywood correspondent, Jimmy Fiddler. Of all those engaged in supplying meat to the nation, the American Meat Institute presents The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. The Rileys have just witnessed a performance of a Thanksgiving play at the high school, and right now they're waiting for their daughter Babs outside the stage door.
I thought the play was fine, especially the way Babs played Priscilla.
Yeah, Babs was good. And I got a laugh when Captain Miles Standish's beard fell off. Boy, was his face nude.
Oh, if I was Priscilla, I'd sooner marry Miles Standish than Elmer Gillis.
But the Gillis boy was playing John Alden. She had to marry him. That's history.
Now, wait a minute. If they were so stuck on getting history into it, answer me this. Where was Nathan Hale?
Nathan Hale wasn't a pilgrim. Pop, you're all mixed up.
Junior, a little respect, please. I know history, too. Nathan Hale was the fellow who said, I regret that I have but one wife to give to my country.
Riley, if you see any of Babs' teachers, don't talk history with them.
Believe me, that play wasn't history. and that Elmer wasn't a pilgrim. He was a grim pill. What an actor. He ain't got enough life in him to play a dead body, that guy.
Oh, quiet, Riley. Huh? Here's Elmer's father.
Well, 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 if it ain't the Riley.
Oh, hello, Gillis. I was just saying how your boy Elmer played John Alden. Great.
Thanks. And whatever you've been saying about my boy Elmer's acting goes double for your daughter Babs.
Well,
Oh, dear. Those pilgrims sure lived in romantic days. Sometimes I wish we'd been born in those days.
If we had, we'd be pretty old by now, huh?
I suppose you might have married Captain Miles Standish instead of me, huh, Peg?
Well, it depends, Riley. You think you could have kept us some fresh turkeys like John Alden kept Priscilla?
Well, sure, I know how to shoot a gun. Remember the time we had a shooting match down at Cohen's farm? Didn't I shoot the cigar right out of Muley Durkin's mouth?
Well, sure you did. But the target was a tin can on a fence.
Was it?
Yes, Riley, if I was a turkey, I wouldn't be worried when you came around.
There's a woman's logic for you. Look, Peg, we're married, ain't we? If you was a turkey, I'd be a turkey, too, and turkeys don't go around shooting each other.
Now, you take me, Riley. Every year, I go up to Antelope Valley. I shoot a gobbler for Thanksgiving.
Oh, you do?
Well, sure. Ask my wife.
You hear that, Riley?
What he can do, I can do.
Huh? Well, sure you can. It's the same. I'm getting our turkey from Jake's Market.
Now, listen. Hey, Peg, where you going?
Oh, I'll be right back. I'm just going inside to see what's keeping Babs.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll go with you, Mom.
Look, Gillis. What's the idea of tearing me down in front of my wife? Telling them cock and bullet stories about shooting turkeys, huh?
Well, it's true. If I'm lying, may I never see my landlord again.
I still don't believe you.
On the level, Riley. See, every Thanksgiving up in Antelope Valley, they have a big turkey shoot. The best 10 scores win a turkey. It's only $1 a try. And with $5, you're sure to win one.
Oh, I can win a turkey at a shooting match, huh?
Well, sure, it's a cinch. And Digger O'Dell, the undertaker, he'd lend you his cabin he's got up there.
Well, that'd be perfect. Well, look, supposing a guy, naming no names, but suppose that this guy couldn't shoot so good and he wanted to show his wife he was a good shot. Suppose this guy loses in the match.
Well, I know one man, again, naming no name, but he happens to be my children's father. This guy, if he loses in the shoot, he buys a turkey from some guy who wins.
Oh, I get it, Gillis, yeah. Well, the first thing tomorrow, I'm seeing Digger O'Dell and talking turkey. Digger, glad I found you home. How's my favorite undertaker?
Glad to see you, Riley. You're looking fine. Very natural.
I feel good. Say, Digger, I got a favor to ask you about Thanksgiving.
Ah, Thanksgiving. Roast turkey, cranberry sauce, gravy. I adore Thanksgiving. It's so gay.
Yeah, well, I want to prove to my wife that I'm a good shot, so could I borrow your place up in Antelope Valley this Thanksgiving, please?
Certainly, Riley. Glad to be of help in your hour of need. In my profession, we have a slogan. The good that you do to people will come back to you in the end. And so will the people. Riley, you'll enjoy my ranch.
Ranch? Say, how big is this place of yours?
It's a mile long by 15 feet wide. The land used to belong to a railroad. but they moved over to straighten the track.
Well, that's a kind of an odd shape, though, isn't it?
Yes, long and narrow, but very comfortable.
Yes, sir.
Personally, I adore it. The wide open spaces, the bracing air, the smell of wood smoke to sharpen the appetite. It makes you feel so alive.
Well, I gotta be going, and thanks for everything, Digger.
Cheerio, Riley. Oh, bury me not on the lone prairie.
I think spending Thanksgiving in the woods is silly.
But you love Digger's Ranch. The house is filled with wide open spaces. You gotta brace yourself against the fresh air because your lungs are filled with wood smoke. It makes you feel as if you were alive.
Well, maybe. But I still think we better stay home on Thanksgiving.
Oh, nothing doing. I'm going to make you take back what you said about me being a bad shot. I'm going to win at that shooting match.
Oh, well, I don't mind going, but couldn't we buy a turkey and bring it up there? You know, just in case.
Stop worrying, Peg. I guarantee to bring in a turkey. If I don't, I'll eat my hat.
Save the crown for me, Pop.
Junior.
I'm glad I got you in time. This is Gillis.
Well, hurry up, Gillis. We're just leaving for the woods. The family's outside waiting for me.
Oh, I got bad news, Riley.
Huh?
I just heard that the turkey shoot's been called off.
Huh? They can't do this to me. What am I going to do now?
Call the trip off.
I can't back out now. I've been bragging so much about what a good shot I am. If I don't win a turkey, I'm a dead duck.
Hurry up, Riley.
I'm coming. I got to go now, Gillis. Maybe I'll think of something on my way to the station.
Riley, who was that on the phone?
Gillis.
Oh, is anything wrong?
No.
But then why are you looking so gloomy?
Well, Gillis was just telling me about a nice family he knows that may be without a turkey for Thanksgiving.
In a moment, we'll find out if Riley can wriggle out of his dilemma. Well, it's Thanksgiving morning, and the Rileys are at Digger Odell's cabin in the woods. Riley, determined to keep up his big bluff that his shooting skill will get him a turkey, is tramping through the woods, gun in hand, with Junior.
Junior, I don't know why you had to come along. You're going to make me nervous when I'm aiming at the target.
Oh, I'm sticking with you, Pop. I want to see how you do in that shooting match.
Don't even trust your own father.
Hey, Pop, you said the turkey shoot was being held near Hooper Falls. We're going the wrong way. Look, there's a station.
Yeah, I know. Junior, look, we gotta have a father and son talk. It's time you knew something. I can't put it off any longer.
Oh, you mean you're gonna tell me about the bees and the flowers?
Now, Junior, about the birds. One particular bird, a turkey. Look, Junior, we always been good friends. With us, it's been one for all and every man for himself. It's always gonna be that way, right?
Okay, Pop. What is it you don't want me to tell Mom?
Well, you don't have to be so blunt. But you see, the turkey shoot was called off.
You mean we aren't going to have a turkey?
Well, it looked that way at first, but just before we got on the train, I got a big idea. I phoned Jake's meat market from the depot, and I fixed it with Jake to ship a turkey up here on the morning train. Now I pick it up at the station and tell your mother I won it at the turkey shoot. Ha, 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 what a rib.
What a fib.
Well, after we're all full of turkey, I'm going to tell the truth.
Oh, here's the station, Pop.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, I don't see it outside, and the station's locked.
Well, somebody's got to be here. How am I going to get my turkey? Wait. Here's a note on the window here. Closed today. Closed? No, they can't do this to me.
Oh, Pop, now we ain't going to have any turkey, and it's Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Junior, for keeping me informed.
Oh, well, Pop, let's go home.
So, Junior, I can't go home without a turkey, so now I'm really going hunting.
But, Pop, there's no turkeys in these woods.
Well, there's other game to hunt. There's deer.
Deer? But we'll never get it home. A deer's too big.
Well, all right, then. I'll shoot a rabbit. They're smaller.
Oh, you couldn't shoot a rabbit. They're too fast.
Yeah, well, then keep your eye open for a turtle.
Gosh, turtle.
Well, I heard it's very tasty. We could have turtle drumsticks and stuff the shell with chestnuts. Come on.
Well, if you ask me, we're on a wild goose chase.
Well, if we get a wild goose, that's better than nothing. Come on, let's...
Gee, we've been walking for 4 hours, and here we are, back at the train track.
Yeah, my feet would give their right arm to get out of my shoes. Junior.
What?
Did you ever hear of a mirage that looked like a turkey?
No, Pop.
Then look where I'm pointing. And if you see what I see, I'm going to shoot.
It's a bird, okay, Pop. Listen.
It's a turkey. A big gobbler. Junior, stand back. I'm taking aim.
Pop, you're shaking. Should I hold a gun still?
No, you better go hold the turkey. No. No, stay here. Get behind me, Junior.
Let me shoot it, Pop.
No. Look out. Now I got a bead on him. I see him under the gun sight.
Pop, he's coming toward us.
I won't shoot till I see the white meat of his eye. One, two.
You missed him.
I couldn't have missed.
Well, open your eyes and look. He's still coming at you, Pop.
I'll get him this time. Ha! Pick him up, Junior.
You didn't even touch him. Now he's running toward us.
Junior, he's surrendering. He knows when he's licked. What the?
Gosh, Pop. I think he likes you.
Yeah. I can't shoot no bird that gives himself up, can I? Now, go away, turkey. Shoot. Go on. Turkey, stop trying to kiss me. Go on.
Hey, Pop, look, there's a tag on his leg.
Well, read it.
Let's see. My name is Sultan. I belong to Patty Kane, age 7. Please do not feed me.
Feed him? I wanted him to feed me.
Gosh, what a Thanksgiving. No turkey.
It ain't right. I'm a law-abiding man. Don't I do my work? Don't I buy war bonds? Don't I let the government withhold my tax? But I have to go without turkey on Thanksgiving. It ain't right.
Boy, that cabin sure looks good, don't it, Pop?
Well, I gotta go in and explain to your mother about no turkey. This is what I get for trying to be a smart aleck. Huh? Here goes.
Riley, Junior, where have you been?
Well, Peg, I've been thinking. Why don't we all go on a diet? Starting today, a foodless diet.
Well, we can talk about it after dinner. Meanwhile, the turkey's getting cold.
I think we've... did you say turkey?
Of course, turkey. In the dining room on the table.
Turkey? Gosh, Junior, look. What a turkey.
Oh, Mom, did you shoot it?
Yeah, Peg, how, who, when...
That was some joke you played on us, Riley, you clever thing. Station master said you had it shipped up here from town, and he knew we'd want it today. Brought it here himself.
Yeah. Ain't that ironical?
Hey, Pop, your neck's getting red.
That sunburn left over from last summer, Junior.
Well, dinner's ready, Daddy.
Okay, folks, grab your chairs. Every man for himself. Come on,
hey,
follow up.
Oh, it looks delicious.
Start carving, Pop.
Okay, let me have that carving knife. Dr. Riley wanted in surgery. Just to make sure everybody gets enough turkey, I'm going to give you your second helpings first.
Riley.
Huh?
Haven't you forgotten something?
Huh? Oh. Oh, yeah. I almost forgot. Well, here it is, another Thanksgiving Day. We have plenty to thank you for. For our food and for our work that earns it, and most of all, for all of us being here together. Some families are pretty far apart today. If you could see your way clear to bring them back together again pretty soon now, we'd be mighty grateful for that, too. We thank you for letting us live in a country where there'll always be a Thanksgiving Day, and if you help us, well, we'll do all we can so that someday there won't be any place in the world where people can't live in peace with each other. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
We'll be back in a moment with your favorite Hollywood correspondent, Jimmy Fiddler.
Folks, this is Bill Bendix welcoming Jimmy Fiddler, who has a special message for us. So, Jimmy, on behalf of all the Rileys, welcome. Our microphone is yours.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, Thanksgiving Day is almost here. Perhaps if you have loved ones overseas and if there'll be empty chairs at your table on Thanksgiving, you may think you haven't much for which to be grateful. Perhaps food rationing, gas rationing, shortages here and shortages there have aggravated you. If that's true, open your minds and your hearts. We Americans have plenty to be thankful for. We can be thankful that we have freedom of speech. We can be grateful for free press, for free screen and radio, freedom to worship God as we wish. Thankful that we can laugh and can speak our minds without fear. That we can say no and not be forced to say yes at the point of a bayonet like the people of Germany and Japan. We can be thankful that our cities and homes haven't been bombed and that our babies haven't gone hungry. We can be thankful that the men who lead us today are now determined that there should be no more wars, no more death and tragedy and famine. Let's protect this magnificent freedom and prove our thanks by buying war bonds, buying them till our pocketbooks are pinched. Good night.
Follow The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix and sponsored by the American Meat Institute, next week at this same time.
does work. You're listening to KECA, Los Angeles.
You are actually listening to WHFR, Dearborn. That's going to wrap it for today's classic radio entertainment. We just heard from Wartime, 1944, The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix, November 19, 1944. As we wrap it for our Thanksgiving week installment of Radio Vault, course. If you're interested in mysteries and science fiction and kind of the scary stuff once in a while, join us for Sunday Night Mysteries. That comes your way at 9 o'clock on Sunday night until all the way up until midnight, three solid hours, just like today's Radio Vault.
Sunday morning here on WHFR, then it's time for Jazz with me, Terrence. The Play-By-Ear show airs each and every Sunday between the hours of 10 o'clock in the morning until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, right here on WHFR.FM, WHFR Dearborn.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
Yes, it's...
Well, once again, this is going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault. We will do it again in a week. Tuesday between 10 in the morning and 1 o'clock. This just in, right around the corner. And we will also hear encore presentation of Mountain Stage coming up at 2 o'clock. Have yourself a warm day wherever you are. And we'll catch you next time. See ya.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
The following pre-recorded hour is a WHFR Dearborn new music presentation.
Listening to the only station making waves, WHFR.FM. I am Rob with two B's, and this is This Just In, our weekly pre-recorded new music spotlight show. Basically, we just play a bunch of stuff that we recently received here at the station, and this hour you're going to hear a little bit of everything. We've got blues, we've got jazz, we've got country, some singer-songwriter, some hard rock. We're going to start things off with some blues rock from the album Hot Nostalgia Radio. This is Bo Gregory and the Apocalypse with Satisfy Your Queen on WHFR.FM, the station making waves.